Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on the Ides of March 2017. Whichever one of us is the Emperor, which I guess might be me, because I'm the ruler, yeah. I better watch
that
out
makes
for
sense.
Assassins.
Yeah, that could be anywhere, Nick. They could be, like, in the,
fortunately,
the shadow of your room. They could be in the inside of your glasses, Nick! Ninja pops out. Man, if I had so much money, I would make a little CGI ninja pop out of your glasses to attack you there. Everyone would be like, that was the greatest special effect of all time.
We spent all of our Patreon money on it.
Guys, we have no more money for bonus pods. Sorry.
Now you've reminded me of the fight with Lilibaro where Nanao pops out of his nose shadow thing.
Oh, yeah. It did happen.
Oh, I'm never going to escape the memory of Bleach. Okay, so it's Wednesday again, which means that we're going to be talking about some manga, which I'm sure is the only thing in the world that people care about. There is nothing else going on that is newsworthy that we could possibly comment on, like the weather or politics or stupid comments that someone made or YouTube or Power Rangers stream. Nothing. Nothing is going on in the world, so we don't have to do any tangents. We can just go straight to talking about manga.
Yeah, we'll just immediately go right into it, which is sad because I had so many comments about how my back hurts from shoveling, but I don't want to address the weather at all, so I'm just going to say anonymously shoveling things, which then
anonymously,
which then very much sounds like I murdered somebody, right? Like I was like, I hurt my back shoveling things. I'm not going to say snow or anything, right? People are like, are you burying bodies?
Shoveling things.
Things. Like, what were you shoveling?
Like everyone in the room, like, imagines you burying a body, and then there's one person who's, like, imagining you playing a sandbox.
Yay! Whee! I'm like, that's the guy I want to hang out with, because he has a good outlook on life.
That sounds like fun. I want to play in a sandbox with Chris.
Said no one in my grade school ever.
Just as much a loser, I guess.
Yeah, he pretty much nailed it.
Oh, boy. It's been pleasant weather down here, though. You know,
frozen tundra
for the rest of the states equals really nice weather for Florida, so.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was basically almost, like, waiting yesterday, because I've had this very big, like, eagerness to leave Pennsylvania, and, Florida and Tampa generally are, like, the number one area in my area, or my list I'd want to move to. And I was basically just waiting for anything to happen that would just push me in that direction. I actually stared at my dog for a couple moments. I was like, Scotia, just give me like a sign that you want me to just leave and move to Tampa. She'd give me anything. That fucking dog has never supported me in my dreams. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man. Well, I don't have any way of transitioning, so I'm just going to, like, I guess just...
Woo!
And we're back! Okay, now it's time to talk about manga. Okay.
I need to remind myself to put a really shitty star wipe in at that point.
Just have...
Dad.
That's George Lucas editing, yeah.
Dad, you know there's other wipes besides star wipe. He's like, why use bologna when you have steak?
All right. We do have...
Oh, no. We've lost Nick! All right. Stay calm, everybody. We'll reconnect. We'll be back. Any moment now.
I can hear you. Why can't you hear me?
I don't know. You disappeared on my end. Your video's gone.
The video's gone. Your video is gone for me as well.
Oh, my.
Yes.
All sorts of...
Gasp.
Alright, okay,
if I disable it and enable it,
yeah,
does that do anything?
Yeah, you're back.
Okay. Alright, you can just do the same thing if you want. Alright. Yes. Okay. So, I turned into a ghost for a second. Alright. Someone in My Hero Academia has ghost powers. Recap portion of the manga recap. Okay.
There we go. Is that what our transition was?
Yes, that's it now.
That's
I was
like,
desperately searching for one for the last 30 seconds.
That was like a classic.
Acknowledge the universe's contribution to me.
That was like a classic transmission awesome segue right there.
Oh, yeah, God. That was when we really had no idea how to do segues.
It's just like, hey, Nick, your shirt's pretty awesome. Speaking of that, awesome blog of the week, everyone. It's like, hey, Nick, you know what rhymes with flog? Blog, like the awesome blog of the week. Kablam! Nailed it!
What did Abraham Lincoln build his cabin out of? Logs. Like blogs. Awesome blogs!
They were, you could say they were some awesome logs, perhaps of the week. And you know, it sounds a lot like that. Awesome blog of the week, but also awesome blog of the week. Blogs, get ready.
Anyway, awesome blog of the week. All right, so My Hero Academia, last time Deku went out on patrol with Mirio, and they ran smack into Overhaul, or actually, specifically, a girl that Overhaul was pursuing for some reason ran headlong into Deku while he was pursuing after her. So they've encountered Overhaul, who happens to be the person that they're trying to investigate at the time, in the middle of an alleyway, and it's kind of this awkward little flashback to just before that encounter. Just kind of with Mirio and Deku just conversing as they're walking around, recapping what they're supposed to be doing, kind of just discussing a little bit of each other's recent actions and stuff, and pondering why Mirio hasn't been telling him certain things up to this point. And then Mirio brings up, oh, we've never told each other our hero names. And Deku's like, well, I'm Deku. And Mirio's like, what? Like, as in good for nothing? Yep. Just doesn't say anything in response to that. He's like, I go by L Million.
He's like, you're kind of depressing, kid. I'm not going to lie.
He says that L Million comes from, he doesn't believe that he is ready to be referred to as All, like All Might. And Million is because that's how many people I want to save someday. So L Million. And then he's like, it also kind of sounds like the rock band Remoro Men. And I'm like, sure it does.
Got it. Yeah, absolutely. Sounds just like him.
And also, I like how Deku is kind of in sync with me because, you know, Mirio says, it sounds like the rock band Remoro Men. And Deku just goes,
yeah.
Yep.
I like to think that they're both, like, inheritors to All Might's power solely based on the fact that they both seem to be really socially awkward and awful in conversation.
Oh, God. But yeah, they've run straight into Overhaul, leader of the Shiei Hasekai. Although they aren't calling him by Overhaul, they just know him by Chisaki, his actual name. So Overhaul says to Deku, oh, I'm sorry that my daughter caused you some trouble by running into you like that. Oh, you know, she'll get riled up when she's playing, and oh, sometimes she even hurts herself if she gets so riled up. So Mirio is like, oh, no, citizen, nothing is wrong, and he kind of awkwardly throws Deku's stupid hood back onto his head. That hood that everyone thinks looks terrible, that he hasn't actually worn over his head since, like, the first time he wore this outfit. Mira is basically like, you know, we're superheroes. We should be presenting ourselves in our superhero identities, even though a bunch of them don't even wear masks. Oh, whatever.
It does make sense, and it does seem like it's on his mind. He's trying to protect Deku the best he can. So I do like how Mirio does show himself to be very mature in this situation. Mm-hmm. He's responding to this as calmly as he can and doing what he can to kind of...
He's taking a very pragmatic approach to it.
Trying to defuse everything without making it obvious, you know?
Because the way that Deku's reacted to it is like, oh, little girl. Oh, my God, the guy we're supposed to be after. And everything is showing on his face. And I think that might actually be another reason why Mirio's throwing the hood back on, is to maybe hide a little bit of Deku's reaction. But yeah, you know, first of all, there's the whole thing, like, we're superheroes, and we should, you know, be inspiring people, and so we can't be like, oh my God, what's wrong, in front of them. There's also the fact that, you know, they can't be tipping off Overhaul to what's going on, although Mirio flat out says, like, oh man, that mask you've got, the ridiculous beak mask, you must be with a Hasekai. And Overhaul's like, oh, don't mind the mask, I'm just sensitive to dust and grime.
And you decided the best way to do it was to wear an enormous protruding fucking plague doctor mask? He's like, yes. What other option is there? Like, I don't know, it's a very common, like, surgical mask. He's like,
well, if I'm going to cover my nose and mouth, I might as well do it with terrifying style.
He's like, I might as well make my face far more obtrusive and annoying by putting an extra, like, foot and a half at the end of it.
I might as well look as intimidating and terrifying as possible in front of my daughter. I'm not sure necessarily that she's his daughter. I don't think that they confirm or deny it in this chapter. So Overhaul kind of engaged them in a little bit of conversation because Mira's like, oh, come on, you know, let's go, Deku. We must get on your feet. We've got to get going. And, you know, sorry, we're kind of new at this. But Overhaul starts to sort of interrogate them. And he's like, yeah, which agency are you working for? And Mira gives a lot of half-truths, like, oh, you know, we're actually interns, you know, we're just getting the chance to see, you know, what's going on, you know, going on a regular patrol, we're not on any particular mission or anything like that. And he also doesn't say Serenidae's name at all. He, in fact, claims that they're not with any particular agency. You know, he'd be like, that'd be way too presumptuous for us to do something like that.
So. I actually love the way he handles that, too. It's very casual with his way of trying to diffuse it very quickly in a natural way as he's trying to, like, do it, push it away. I want to address something in the chat. I didn't mistakenly call it Holocaust Mass in previous episode. That's Nick, all right?
That was me.
Let's not let that information misspread. Fake news. Carry on.
Point at the chat room. You are fake news.
You're fake news. Chat room.
All right.
IRA. He's Kennedy now.
I mean, if you guys want to decide that Chris is responsible for all mistakes in the podcast, that's your prerogative.
No! I have enough guilt of my life already.
I've already made enough actual mistakes. So Miru kind of very heavily hints, hey, Deku, let's get back on patrol so we can get to lunch. But Deku refuses to because the girl actually, like, grabs onto his sleeve, and she's like, don't go, and she's starting to cry. And Deku really awkwardly says, she seems scared. And Overhaul's like, oh, you know, I just got done scolding her. And Miri's like, come on, you're drawing attention to yourself, let's go. But Deku is, you know, pressing the point, like, she's got these bandages on, they don't look like she got injured in a way that, you know, she was just playing a little too rough, and Overhaul very suspiciously says she falls a lot down some stairs.
She just runs into walls a lot. She's so clumsy. It happens after she burns roasts. It's nothing to worry about. Stop asking questions. Get out of here.
And Deku's also playing. He's like, you know, this isn't normal. You know, that a girl like this, she's trembling in fear, you know, quietly gripping on to be like this. This is, you know, not normal. And Overhaul's like, hey, don't presume to know what's normal for other people's households. Which, I mean, even if you weren't a supervillain, would definitely raise all sorts of red flags.
It's not like, hey, we like to, you know, hold hands and say grace before dinner. It's definitely something when you say it, you're like, yeah, sometimes I throw kids in closets when they misbehave. That's how we do things in my house, and stop getting into my business.
Lots of children in plenty of households have growing welts on their back. Come on, what's wrong with you?
If you follow the lessons advice of the Dursleys or the Dudleys, whatever the family from Harry Potter is, whatever the Harry Potter family was.
The Dursleys.
Yeah, I was so close to it. Just give it to me, all right?
Okay. Oh, boy. So, and, you know, Deku is just, because Mirio is at this point kind of like almost psychically trying to like, come on, let it go. We can't arouse suspicion here. And Deku's like, no, because at this point, not taking action as superheroes would be more suspicious, because we're heroes and we see a little girl who looks like she's in danger. How could we not do something at this point? And he thinks to himself, when we don these costumes and step out to the city, no true hero would abandon the child in fear. We become heroes. Which is a pretty cool moment for him. You know, he's doing the dumb thing at this point because he's doing the right thing. So Overhaul is like, all right, yeah, I mean, fine, I guess the jig's up. See, it's actually kind of embarrassing, but, you know, I'd rather people not overhear me, so could you come this way down this dark, narrow alley?
I don't know why. It's just like, it's like the notion that he still at this point is trying to put on a pretense of like, maybe I'm not a villain. It's like, hey, my daughter falls a lot. And you know what? You've cornered me. why don't we just finish this conversation down this alleyway, away from the public eye, where bad things could happen to you, and no one would have to know immediately.
Could you two stand on those large red X's before we talk? So Overhaul says, I've been concerned about Aerie lately. No matter what I say, she fights back. And Deku says, raising a child can be tough, I guess. And Overhaul's like, yes, children are so difficult. What will they become? What can they become? I constantly find myself wondering about that. And he starts to tug at the opening of one of his gloves, which is something that I haven't really noticed him wearing before, because they're not, like, very
pronounced,
obvious. They're the same color as his skin, at least when without coloring. So I'm wondering if we've actually seen him wearing gloves this whole time, or if there's something that he actually puts on if he doesn't want someone to explode into fleshy chunks when he touches them. Which might be what's being implied here, because Aerie immediately reacts to him tugging at his gloves. She just immediately lets go of Deku and runs over to his side. Deku starts to say something, but Overhaul says, oh no, it's always like this. So, you know, sorry for making you listen to our problems. Didn't mean to trouble you. Good luck. Bye. And Deku is still not ready to let go yet, but Mirio's like, come on. Look, did you notice what was going on there? That sudden bloodlust? That's what lured the child over to him. If you push him too far, he'll be that much harder to catch. We need to follow Sir's directive. So, I am still surprised by this side of Mirio that we get to see. I'm right there with you. Like, I'm glad that we see that, like, oh, he's a guy that does set a good example for younger students because of his experience. It's just surprising from what we've seen of him to this point, where he seems like a, you know,
kind of airheaded.
A ditz.
Yeah. But it does make sense. I mean, he's supposed to be the inheritor for, or at least at one time was considered the inheritor for All for One, mm-hmm. or One for All. And it does make sense that he would have, he's basically what we kind of hope Deku will be eventually, where it's like somebody who is just that thoughtful, experienced, capable.
So Overhaul and Aerie get back to their base, essentially. And, there's a guard there who's like, I'm sorry, boss. I only turned away for a second. The brat made her get, and you just kind of, and I love the way that Overhaul does this, because he says to one of the guys there, Chrono, who was with him, at the, meeting with the Villain Alliance. He says, you know, prepare the bath. And then the guy starts objecting, and he swipes his hand at the guy, and the guy explodes into a bloody mess against the wall, and clean up this mess. Like, not even looking at the guy as he backhands him into death.
Just obliterates him.
Yeah. And you can tell that Overhaul is kind of annoyed with the confrontation that he had with Deku and Mirio.
Yeah.
He then says to Aerie, later on, you know, that's quite enough selfishness for now. You're the centerpiece of my plan here. Don't make me get my hands dirty any more than I already have. And he leads her into this room where there's a chair hooked up to all of these different weird, ominous-looking machines. So seems as though she's some kind of experiment or fuel source or something along those lines.
Something, definitely. I wonder if, some of the canisters almost look like I can't tell if they might just be empty. It looks like there's a lot of canisters behind the machine. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if maybe it's like they fill with her blood or something, and that's why her arms are covered up like that, to essentially
possibly
cover up track marks and things like that. Yeah, well, I guess we're going to have to kind of see about that.
Mm-hmm. And right at the end of the chapter, one of the other minions, the little tiny one, says that they've gotten a call from Shigaraki, who's going to give his answer.
How foreboding.
Mm-hmm.
I hope the next chapter starts with, like, panel one. No. Click. Panel two. The adventures of Midora, or whatever his name is. Mineta. Mineta at the swimsuit store.
Oh, boy.
It's a decent chapter. I like it. I particularly love that, you know, this chapter goes to kind of show Deku and, to a lesser extent, but still in their own ways, Mirio to be heroes, to be guys who, even though they're aware that the person they're about to, you know, encounter is considered extremely dangerous, that they need to stay away from, Deku can't basically allow, like, he can't play along with the game if it means not protecting this child. And, you know, it plays off the way it should, where the girl realizes that she'd essentially get him killed, so she's the one who kind of diffuses it by going back, so it doesn't
happen. Or maybe she's just afraid of punishment, for that matter.
I feel like it's definitely when she sees the hand, that's when she realizes that he'd probably be killing them. This is my interpretation of it, at least. That's her seeing, like, oh, he's definitely going to try to kill them at this point, so that's when she runs off.
Hmm.
But I do like the way that it kind of resolved and just essentially played out. I like that, you know, when my hero characters get to actually feel heroic, and it's definitely, even though it's not really much of anything, it's, you know, Deku saying, I'm not going to give you this little girl, you know, still feels like a huge heroic kind of moment in their own way.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, nice little chapter.
Let's move on then to Fairy Tale. Chapter 526. My name is what? My name is what? My name is what? Chicka Chicka Slim Shady. It's not that. That'd be an awesome name for a title, but it's not. It's just my name is.
Slim Shady just shows up in the fairy tale world.
What magic would Slim Shady have, Nick?
Probably starting off really shocking and then devolving into a weird dad.
Yeah, there could be that. Like, he has, like, a roulette of really cool powers, but then every so often it has to reach one where he just shits on his wife for a while, or his ex-wife. And then one really lame song about his daughter. So yeah, Fairy Tale. If you recall last time, we made mention of the fact that August kept just repeating this phrase over and over again. Like, why does the Emperor not love his own son? Yeah. So we pick up back basically during that part where it's August fighting against Gildarzt and Kana, and they're trying this magic. They're using their different attacks. Kana uses her card magic, which I forgot she had.
Like, yeah, that's her thing.
It's supposed to be like the main gimmick to her, but she's never done much in the story. And when she finally did, it was basically to get fairy law or whatever, or fairy glitter. So you kind of forgot she had card magic at that point. And I still don't really get what card magic is, but basically, August dodges it, like flips out of the way of that. And any other time something tries to start attacking him, he's been using copy magic to, I guess, basically make himself immune to it, which is what he used against Gildarts' dice magic or slice magic. I forget what he calls it specifically, but he tries to strike at Kana. Gildarts intercepts it, and I guess this hit something that got eaten by Actalogia. And this is where my lack of knowledge of Fairy Tale probably comes in. I forget where this kind of came up before. Is he missing like a chunk of himself?
I don't remember that either.
Yeah, I'm sure it's in there somewhere, but I kind of just forgot about it, I guess. I'm going to skip ahead, basically. Essentially, Gildarts has this long thing about how being a father is kind of what makes him stronger, and that's, you know, the love of a parent and a child is the true magic in the world, and is basically going ham on August, even though it kind of seems like he can't win. So
right,
we cut away to...
Oh, yes, but then why did the Emperor this time?
We cut away then to Xerath inside the guild, where he just basically shot down Lacarde, and Lacarde is just like, why, father?
And Xerath's just kind of like watching, like, oh, okay.
My nephew? Xerath explains, he's like, I have no children. You're just a demon from the Book of Xerath. You're another experiment, and you just happened to be the best, so I gave you the name Dragnil. But that's it. And now, you're interrupting my battle with Natsu, which I'm enjoying, so you're a defective piece of shit, and you should die. And he basically just keeps kicking the shit out of him, and then says, like, let's continue, and Lacarde's just there crying. Cut away to a flashback, And it's kind of where we were last time, where it's Presht, I guess is his name. I can't remember which member of Fairy Tail's old group this was. I thought it was Hades, and maybe that's his first name, but I can't remember anymore. But it's him considering, like, what should I do about this child inside Mavis? And we can see that he, you know, got the child out, and he's like, what to do with the child? It has enormous magical power that's neither good nor evil.
Did he, like, teleported out of her or something? Because she's in a crystal.
I don't know. I can't stop to figure it out. He bamps it out like Nightcrawler. And we start hearing the perspective of the child saying, Presht abandoned me, but I bear no grudge against him, which is weird because I feel like you should. But anyway, I learned about Xerath and Mavis from my own memories. After all, I had quite enough magic for that.
I love how Presht is like, what should I do with this child? Should I allow it to continue on living? Or should I kill it to avoid it there being any danger? It has such great magical power, neither light nor dark. Was this a mistake to let it be born? Should I protect it or kill it? I'm just gonna leave it in a basket out in the wild.
It's like he was like, I'm Pontius Pilate. Like, let me wash my hands of this decision. It's like, it's not like you gave it like a gun and left it out in the wilderness. Like, now you're on your own. It's a fucking infant in a baby basket.
It's dangerous to go alone.
How did this baby survive at all? Because the child continues. My life as a child was one of hardship. Survival was a struggle. And you can see it like being like Aladdin, you know, like stealing food and running from people. But finally, the one who saved me was my own father. Cut back to the fight between August and Gildarts. And Gildarts says, I finally figured out what your magic is all about. My guess, it's instantaneous copy magic, plus the ability to render your opponents powerless. So he's able to basically duplicate their power in one moment. That way he could kind of become immune to it. But he's like, aha! If that's your power, I wondered why would you physically dodge Kana's cards instead of just absorbing them? It's because you can't copy holder-type magic, isn't it?
You know, Fairy Tail has never really focused too much on the different types of magic. We know, of course, about Lucy's magic. That's been given a lot of detail. That's fine. It was at one point, you know, a big thing for her that she was, you know, going around and trying to collect keys so she could summon more celestial
spirits.
And that's cool. That's fine. Every now and again, though, you get something like, Wendy, I have support magic where I just announce, like, RPG stats and say I'm increasing or decreasing them. Urza's equip magic is also explored a fair amount, I guess.
Although she's
the only person who uses it.
It's very, well, that's the thing. Like, you might forget, like, remember, magic's something you can actually buy in the Fairy Tail world. Like, there are stores that sell magic. And that was something that was kind of brought up very early on that just never really had a reason, I guess, to come up again. But, like, we kind of always just assume that, like, magic is specified to these people, like a devil fruit or something like that. But it's not the case. And that's, people are capable, I think, of having different kinds of magic. It's just everyone specializes, I guess, in one thing, and it just kind of ends there.
You know, Dragon Slayer magic, okay, I get that. Because so often it's just like, oh, you know, it's Battle Shonen, you know, the bunch of different types of powers go up against each other, and that's it. There's not a whole lot of emphasis placed on types of magic and their different properties. There's never seems to be a how-to guide on all this stuff. So yeah, holder-type magic, I'm just like, okay, whatever, if you say so.
Fine. Yeah. I mean, it does make sense. Like, they explain it kind of succinctly after that. Of course you can't, because Lucy can't go calling any celestial spirits without her keys. It's like, yeah, so August can copy magic, but he obviously can't copy magic that has some kind of, like, material component that has to be...
Because he can't copy first. He can't copy the tool.
Yeah, exactly. So she starts throwing her cards again, and Gildart says... Because I always got to bring a smile to my sweet little daughter's face. I mean, it's kind of weird, but whatever. We cut back then to that child's flashback, and we kind of intersect back and forth from it, too. And the child says, my father did not know who I was, but that was for the best. I became his disciple, and I built a country with him. And Gildart hits August with an attack that, for the life of me, I can't fucking read what this is.
It's way down at the bottom of the page.
Break the false to reveal the true heaven. Like, Break the False to Reveal the True, I guess, is the title, and then True Heaven is the specific name of the technique. I don't know what the fuck that is. I don't know if this is a special kind of magic I've forgotten about, which is very likely, but I can't tell specifically what that is, and why August can't, like, if it's a Holder-type magic, why can't he duplicate this one, essentially? Regardless, in the flashback, the kid says, "And Father gave me a name." So Zareth's like, "I spent some time with the Seton girl, and that time was precious to me. It was in the month of August, and you remind me a little of her." And we realize that this flashback and the Emperor's child that he did not love was, in fact, August instead of Lacarde. It was not him at all. It was August himself. And he says, "The reason why His Majesty never loved his child is because he never realized he had one." Dot, dot, dot.
How does August know this?
He explained it. He has fucking magic baby brain powers.
Oh, God, you guys. If you...
you guys, if you had your baby memories, you might be able to remember.
You could be the strongest member of this fucking club.
You could know all kinds of copy magic. See, I've evolved past the point of needing to use Holder magic, because I've just transcended a little bit further. I guess I'm just a little bit beyond you.
I mean, if you guys want to rely on tools that are produced by a society that relies on capitalism and wants to exploit the poor in order to make the rich even richer, then that's fine. That's cool. But I refuse to be part of that.
I was using this type of magic before Holder magic was cool, and you guys are kind of just picking up on the trend afterwards. It's like, I fucking hate you, August. Now, yeah, he kind of explained it. He was like, I had enough memory to learn about Xerath and magic, or Xerath and Mavis from my own memories. I had enough magic for that. So I guess he just had some magic way of kind of remembering.
It's magic, bitch.
It is. It's essentially magic. But that said, I like this chapter and this twist, because this does feel like one of the legitimate times I feel like Hero got one over on me by being a good writer. This was a very good... like, pull the rug underneath you, set up one thing, turns out, misdirection, it was August. And it makes more sense for it to be August. Like, Lacarde being revealed to be the kid, it's like, who cares? Like, and it's kind of weird to be like, oh, my precious son with magic that's neither good nor evil. It's like, he has orgasm magic. How is there, like, it's not really like a neutrality to it that much.
I think that that's sort of the reason that we kind of... were very slow to realize that the implication was Mavis was pregnant in the last chapter, was because we were like, what? But Lacarde's not really her kid.
Yeah.
What are they talking about? And it was like, oh no, there really was a kid. And it wasn't a kid. No, it was August. Oh, okay.
But yeah, it makes sense that August is that kid. It then helps to kind of more firmly establish why he is the strongest mage of that country if he's born to two parents of that kind of lineage.
Yes.
It makes him feel significant, which is important because he has been built up to be one of the most significant people of the enemy country during this entire arc. And it was just delivered in a nice way. I even love the last line, too. I mean, that's, you know, go back last chapter was annoying, but why did the Emperor not love his child? It's because he never realized he had one. It's sappy, but it works, and I like the way it was kind of delivered. So I actually really like this chapter of Fairy Tail, but I'm not crazy on what happened with Guild Arts. I guess it was kind of just like a scale of we didn't have anyone else to beat this guy, so we just went to Guild Arts. Because I guess Guild Arts just doesn't feel like an important enough of a character for me to follow. Like, he's a strong member of Fairy Tail, but it's just, you only ever get to see him out of like three chapters every couple years or so. Like, he doesn't hang around or anything like that. You don't know a tremendous amount about him. And it was at this point where it's like, Urza's already had a much more important, significant fight for her to go through. Natsu fighting this guy would just be spinning the wheels of getting to Xerath, essentially. Gray's had another fight. Like, except for maybe Lucy fighting this guy, nobody really feels like they were really on that tier that needed to kind of battle this guy. So Guild Arts seemed like the best one. But I just didn't get a whole lot of this, like... I mean, it's definitely thematic of having the whole conversation about August fighting him being... realizing he's the son of the Emperor at the same time as fighting somebody else who's got this related, you know, father-daughter relationship, essentially. It just didn't really do that much for me, because I've never found that much particularly special about Guild Arts and his relationship with Kana.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't feel genuine a lot of the time, the relationship between Guild Arts and Kana. Also, if this is like the way that they beat August, then it's like, we're not gonna be able to do terrible John Cena rhymes with him anymore.
I know. It also does, like, hit that point, too, of, like, I get that it's, like, just standard shonen hyperbole, but God, the Spriggan 12 sucked. Like, this dude does not feel that crazy powerful. Like, they described it, like, this dude is the greatest wizard to ever exist, and he's like, oh, I've gotten beaten by card magic and generic fucking explosion magic. Oh!
Two-faced rappers walk away with four shiners. The wrong rhyme, I turn the legends to old timers.
My incise is like a viper button. Brew your something, something. One-liners.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, that's Fairy Tale this week. I still like the chapter overall, so.
I definitely do like the whole stuff with August, but I don't know. I get this feeling that it would be a waste if they did this as, like, the last thing that is done with August, you know? Mm. Especially if you compare, like, all the stuff that happened with Irene setting up all of her backstory in order to give her a big conclusion. This feels very pale by comparison.
I think it would have helped, I think, if somebody more significant were involved in this fight. It really does feel like Kana and Gildar kind of drag it down.
Well, because, you know, why would you dedicate a whole bunch of time to a fight involving Kana and Gildar as opposed to Urza?
It is one of those things, too, of, like, stop trying to make Kana a thing. She's not going to be a thing at this point. You had your opportunity, like, and you lost it, essentially.
She's, like, the fifth most important female character in Fairy Tail at best. It's, like, Lucy, Urza, Wendy, Levi. I would put all of those ahead of her. So.
Oh yeah, I mean, she doesn't rank that high on there to begin with, and then, like, it's not even like she really would make, like, the Fairy Tail B team either. You know, like, that's
immediately. I don't think she did make the Fairy Tail B team.
No, she did. She was the reserve member, I think, because that's where she. Remember, because each team had, like, a reserve member, and I think they revealed it was her so she could use her fucking glitter magic on somebody or some stupid shit like that. It was like, man, you're the fucking...
No, she didn't make the B team. I just love the phrasing of that. No, she didn't make the B team. She was the reserve member.
She was the bench member, you know? She was the Yuki Mitsu of the fucking Fairy Tail
B team. Of the backups. Oh, God. All right, let's move on to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma. It's chapter 206. Welcome to the final battleground. Chris, were you happy when suddenly Alice showed up at the start of this chapter?
I was super excited. I was like, and thank God, because it's like everyone's super depressed about the fact that they've
been
expelled.
And Alice is just like, hi, I'm Alice, and I got expelled recently. Anyway, like, all these guys are really depressed about it.
I just, like, totally got expelled. It's nice to meet you, music note. Like, she's just that okay. Pretty
happy.
Oh my
God, the fucking Doom Clouds are the other students who are expelled along with me. They are, like, so depressing. Oh, they're better than the gloom zombie note over there, known as Secretary Girl.
Any hoozles, right now. Like, I just want this, like, fucking narration to end with, like, I'm out of 5,000! Like, just all the teen fucking lingo you can squeeze in there.
Just have Alice narrate, like, the entire rest of the series.
She needs to narrate every series. She's like, so anywho, turns out August is actually the baby of those guys. Like, hello, shocker.
So anyway, Ray remembers all of his memories from when he was an infant. That's totally crazy.
Isn't that just the craziest?
Isn't that just amazeballs?
Hashtag brave. He's like, I didn't like using hashtags. Hashtags are a degradation of human communication methods.
Twitter is too mainstream for me. I only used how to.
He's like, there's no thought I have worth expressing that can be condensed to only 140 characters. My thoughts are far more exquisite and extensive than that.
Actually, that's a lie. They would be 140 characters if they used the language that I invented exclusively, but you wouldn't be able to understand it then.
Ipne bako badeva. It's like, I fucking hate you, right?
You don't like what I call him, but I did.
He just sounds like the Athorians of Star Wars, which just sounds like he's burping the whole time. It's like, who did you make this conversation with? Actually, only me and the other 700 smartest people in the world who also remember their baby memories know this language. It's actually a language you remember while you're in uterus.
We gotta stop defaulting to Ray for every series. Right. So people are obviously depressed from everything. Hisako is incredibly distressed that they're going to witness the Regiment de Cuisine. I was just like, come on, guys, we gotta, you know, cheer everyone on and we gotta get it together. And, Hayama is like, you know, you probably don't want me here. I was like, come on, Hayama.
Good God.
Like, he's just been doing this for like the entire trip there or something. And, you know, Hayama's supposed to go like, but I betrayed you all. And I was like, don't even say, I don't deserve to be here with you. I'm sick.
She's like, I'm so tired of his nonsense. This is ridiculous.
I do really like what she says afterwards, though, because she's like, the bonds between us first year's classmates and most importantly, the lab coat trio are not so easily severed. They're forever. She's grabbing Hayama and Kurokim and dragging them
with her. It does. I like that it gives her that focus, and I also like that it shows that she is kind of like this energetic heart of the group, essentially, that she's, yeah. Of all the people who got expelled, she's the one who's kind of trying to keep morale as high as they can.
Mm-hmm. having faith in her friends that she's trained with, yeah.
And I also love how she explains, she's like, so anyway, after we got expelled, we were supposed to be shipped right to Tokyo, but I threw this, like, this epic hissy fit and got permission to stay around.
I love how she just goes, like, I convinced them to let us stay, or I made them see the error their way. She's like, I threw this, like, epic hissy fit.
She doesn't hide it, and her whole dialogue is her being like, see, we have a secret duty to see her through the exam, like, blah, 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 blah. Like, it literally in the text says blah, 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 blah. And I like to think that is actually what she just started saying, but she just kept swinging her arms and fucking
blah, 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 blah.
Teenage girly bitching that the, like, guards were just like, fucking whatever. I don't care.
Just shut up.
Just let her stay, get her One Direction tickets, whatever. Shuts up, teenage girls. Buy her makeup. I don't know.
Ugh. Yes, you can go to the party. Like, toast but goats, sweet.
Toast but goats.
Oh, God. So they arrive at the special venue. And, it's time for the big team competition. They actually mention that the judges have arrived, but they're waiting in the VIP guest suite. So secret special guest judges for later on. Some of the resistance crew realize that basically all the students that are in attendance there have kind of been brainwashed, or have completely given up resisting to the point that they're actually cheering on Central. So, Central is going to have the home field advantage, as a result of this from everyone cheering them on, I guess. We are introduced to Urara Kawashima, whom I don't might have popped up at some points, but was, you know, probably just like a montage of various students who were attending earlier. She is the idol and heartthrob of the 92nd generation. And in the introduction little panel, you know, high school first year, it says brainwashing complete for her. And she's got like swirly eyes too. Like, I don't know if a cooking school can actually do this to people.
What does the level of brainwashing even mean? Oh, she was the presenter for the Fall Classics prelim, so I guess this is their way of saying like they brainwashed her to be on Central side, I guess.
Right. The remaining eight members of the Council of Ten come through the doors, being introduced and getting a big cheer. I like little details like how the two new members that joined at the same time as Hayama, their faces are still hidden. One girl is, you know, tucking her cap down. The other is covering her face with her hand all ominously in a way that seems like she's doing it to look, look badass. So it's not like, I'm trying to hide my
or just, I think they're both guys, but I think it's
they
like.
Might be guys. I don't know.
Yeah. Or like this, like, I have a.
Plenty of long haired guys. I'm just assuming, I am assuming based entirely on they have long hair. So.
Also, hey, you gotta have food war chefs that are females so that when they eat food, their clothes could explode. I don't know why the thing that I take away the most from this, I'm like, I think it's super fucking baller that Rindo has a black uniform. I don't know why. I'm like, that is so cool looking.
This is Rindo when she gets badass. She puts her hair up and everything. I think she looks really cool, honestly. She's got like, it almost looks like a military uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, all of the crowd are cheering on Central and stuff. And they're even cheering on individual people. I like how one person is like, Rindo Senpai, notice me. Alice has a flashback to, them talking with Soma over Skype. I think that they have, what
it's
does
called,
it say?
It's called Skype-u. Skype-u.
You know the way that Hiruma had a Wyo laptop in Aisho 21, and they went to like Wackdonald's or whatever.
Yeah. What you don't see is that halfway through their conversation, they start getting connection issues, and then for some reason, Soma can't hear them, but they can hear him, and they can't figure out why. So they're checking their mic settings for 20 minutes.
Have you guys installed the update? Yes, we both installed the latest version.
Yeah, it screwed up all my contacts. I fucking hate this.
Screw this, I'm just going to hang out with chill-outs. We're going to use gaggle chill-outs for the rest of this.
Gaggle.
So, Hayama is trying to offer as much support as they can. It's like, hey, you know, if you need any additional stuff for training, like ingredients and stuff, we'll gather together and send it off to you. Alice gives them a little bit of a hey, you know, our futures are on the line, so if you lose, I'm going to have to make you regret it. But then she gets really sincere for a second and says, you know, I wish so much that I could be there fighting together with all of you. I'm sorry I dumped this burden entirely on you. And, right away, Soma's like, oh, come on, don't get all sappy and sappy sob story on me. So, the only thing on my mind right now is giving the council a beatdown and taking the top spot. So there's no reason for any of you to be worried and depressed. Which is, you know, another nice moment. I mean, one of the things that we brought up, I was like, oh god, Kirk, Eva, Alice, none of them are taking part in any of this last competition. So it's nice that they're getting this extra emphasis and focus in this chapter. Kirk, Eva brings up the point of, hey, are you seriously going to take on Central with just four people? Someone's like, ah, we've got a few others in mind who will we be drumming up while we're doing training. Okay.
Three of whom make perfect sense and are a big surprise. One of whom, I guess we just forgot about and realized he hadn't been expelled yet.
I completely called who one of them was going to be, though. Yes. I will have you know. So
you did.
This is probably the one part of the chapter that I really don't like, though. As we cut back to the present with the resistors all being revealed, and yeah, you've got the four that we know about, Erina and Takumi and Amegami and Soma. And with them are Mimasaka Subaru, who was someone who I predicted would join them, and the three other members of the Council of Ten who got kicked out. So Ishiki and Kuga, and did not recognize him at all without his stupid hat. Megishima.
Yes. So I like this, in a, you know, definitely in a potential. Like, I like having Ishiki be there. It makes perfect sense for him to be there. And Kuka does make sense as well, since we know him. And it's, like, in a way, it is kind of cool to see, whatever his name is, Megishima. Because he is the third seat, so it's easily one of the most notable members of the council tend to be on there. But it's kind of weird how this all comes together. Because it's like,
here they are.
Yeah, it's like, hey, half of our team. It was like this idea of like we're the young underdogs, but we're all like these first year students who have come together and we're gonna fight against this, you know, this monolith that is Central. But we also got support from all the coolest old people who you haven't really seen in a while. In fact, you've never even really seen this one dude do anything. Also, this guy is over here who we're not really friends with, and he doesn't do a whole lot. He kind of showed up once in the Fall Classic, then helped me out during the festival arc, and then just hasn't done shit since then. But don't worry, he gets on this 8-man team. Alice, you're gone. Hayama, you're gone. Don't worry, though, fucking Subaru, you're in here. It's like, all right.
I mean, I'm totally fine with Miyosaka being there, because he has been an occasional. He was the one-time ally to Soma. They know each other from when they went against each other in the Fall Classic. And he's also young, yes, like that. But it's just like, okay, yeah, these three other council members are just gonna be fine with them with no build-up, no preamble. Yeah.
I kind of definitely like the idea more when it was the idea that the exiled members of the Council of Ten were going to assist Soma's group through advice, like when Kuga helped him out with the bear meat.
You know, like Megashima is going to tie a rope around Takumi and make him run faster than he's used to.
Yeah, like, because I'll tell you what, this
Ishiki is going to teach Megumi all of his hand techniques.
Yeah. But that was, like, the idea that they were going
to be instrumental in the match against Central.
Yeah, you're going to have all the hand techniques there, Megumi. Yeah, fuck it, I'll just do it for you. You can mess something up. But, like, what this has ultimately done is immediately got me back in the mode. I'm like, why the fuck's Aldini in here? He seems so much more boring again now that he's surrounded by these much more important people.
And it also makes me get the sense, I mean, we've been bringing up the last couple of weeks, is Shokugeki no Soma suddenly ending? And this really makes it feel that way, doesn't it? That these guys just show up all of a sudden.
If it's not that this manga's ending, it definitely makes me feel that this arc is definitely ending. Because this is, like, what else are you going to do with these characters then at this point?
Mm-hmm. I mean, if... I'm going to be very disappointed if the series as a whole, you know, just, like, ends very quickly from here. And I hope that even if this whole thing plays out very quickly, maybe, you know, we can just, like, declare it a failure and move on to the next thing. Because when you think about it, Soma and everybody else are at the point of graduating from first year into second year. So maybe that's where this is headed. But I don't know. I just remember being so excited a couple of years ago when this whole thing was starting up. And
it had so much potential to it. And, like, Azami as this crazy antagonist threat who just felt so huge. It's really this moment here where you sit here and you see these three guys show up and you're like, you know, I don't care how much bullshit you maybe had to pull out to do it, but I wish, like, these three had found some way to essentially exchange their place in the school to put Alice, Hayama, and Kurikiba in there instead. Like, put in the characters who we've actually followed and would feel more exciting to be in this role as opposed to, like, hey, it's, you know, three guys you don't really have that much of a care about are now suddenly joining this team and kind of in their own way are eclipsing the characters we were trying to start caring about anyway.
Mm-hmm. The first bout is a 3-on-3. Soma is matched up against the glasses girl, Kinokuni, and Megashima and Ishiki are matched up against the two new members of the council, and that's where we leave off.
Yeah, so it's
three of them on each side are cooking at the same time, and they can, of course, help each other. But those are the three matchups. Soma and Kinokuni can eliminate each other, and so on.
Yeah. So, I guess this is a quick way to... I mean, this might even just be their way of eliminating half of fucking Central's team at once, because I don't see a very good chance of Soma getting eliminated, and these two new characters kind of exist in the Council of Ten to just be fodder. Like, I doubt they're meant to be.
It could be a, you know, a shocking turnabout. Like, oh, the new members of the Council of Ten are even better than these two old ones. That's a possibility.
It'd be tough to buy into that, though, when they're going up against the seventh seat, who is, like, the most distinct member of the group as an ally.
The one that we've known of in the Council of the longest.
And then the guy who's been the third seat in the Council. Mm-hmm. So, I think that...
I think it would be kind of funny if we, like, never learned who these two were.
We don't ever see their faces. The next shot's them, like, on the ground, like, fucking writhing from their food orgasm and shit.
It's like, they get, like, jobber introductions from wrestling. It's like, yeah, he's Joe Block from...
Coming up to the ring, Ishiki Senpai and Super, whatever his name is, already in the ring, Joe Magnum and Ralph Getem.
Megashima does like his entire 2-minute long introduction.
He's got...
hits all four ring posts. And already in the ring.
He's got like six different...
Overseas, he's been waiting quietly the whole time.
He's got like six different pyro spots. Boom, 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 boom.
Costs $200,000 every time I get ready for a wrestling match.
That's why you don't see me a lot.
Chokeslam 1, 2, 3. Okay. So I don't know. I had a very instinctive reaction to this chapter. I did really like all the stuff that was at the beginning with Alice recap. He's like, oh yeah, we're going to be there to cheer a team on. Here were our reactions to it. you can tell. I really like the stuff that Alice gets with, you know, putting on a good face, but obviously she is disappointed in herself that she wasn't able to stand with her friend at the final confrontation. But then right at the end, just going, are you sure you want to do this? That made me very upset. So
yeah, no, I think maybe what we'll see from this arc will kind of determine things. It's too soon to say, but I really do hope that this isn't what we think is happening. I hope it's not ending here, because this has the makings of a very disappointing ending on it. And I don't want another iShield 21. Yeah. Speaking of iShield 21.
Yes. So we're going to our jump starts, beginning with Dr. Stone. For those of you who are not aware, this is written by Richiro Inugaki, who is also the writer of iShield 21, which is my favorite series, and I know one of your favorites, Chris. Mm-hmm. But the art is not by Murata, it's by Boichi, who did Sunken Rock, which was a series we covered a couple of years back. So the premise of the series is that all of humanity, after a bizarre cataclysmic event, has been turned to stone, and our two main characters, Taiju and Senku, have been released. And so we begin with Chapter 2, Z equals 2, Fantasy versus Science. And we basically see Senku and Taiju just kind of living for a bit, because Taiju, you know, goes around, he gathers a bunch of all sorts of different things. I like how it's mostly, you know, mushrooms, fruit, berries, and then a freaking tiny little dead pig.
One dead-ass animal.
just going like, I'm dead.
Just shooting right out of the top.
And he brings them back to Senku, who immediately starts soaring through. It's like, this is inedible. This is poison. We would die. No, this is Wolf's Bay. What the fuck are you doing?
I do love the way that this is like, immediately he puts them into piles, and it's as though he knew it was going to be the case, because the inedible one is so much larger than the other.
The edible one is this little basket, and the inedible one is just as large as the one that Taiji was gathering food from.
Yes.
But, you know, he roasts up the remaining ones, and they start, and they eat stuff. And he's like, oh, wow, this is actually really good. And Senku's like, yeah, I got a bunch of salt extracted from seawater, and, you know, this is really the only season you need.
I love that this comes after Food Wars. He's like, so tasty, what'd you season this with? He's like, salt. That's all you really need. It's salt.
You can eat anything if it's salted.
It's like the people from Food Wars are, like, crying in the background. I spent so much time on this fucking meatball fucking, like, cake. No one enjoys it. It's like, hey, put some salt on it.
Taiju runs off again, because he's like, oh, you know, he's like, I'm not very good at creative thinking like you are, Senku, so I'll just make up for it with spirit and effort. And he rushes off to gather more stuff. He comes across some grapes. And after Senku went through this effort of showing just how much shit he had gathered was poisonous, he's like, huh, grapes, can I eat them? Well, I'm never going to know by wondering, so I just have to try. Because those couldn't possibly be poisonous either. But then he notices that the direction he's rushed off in is also the direction of the cave that he was inside of when he woke up. So he goes in there, and he notices that there is this kind of empty platform. And he's like, oh, there must be other survivors besides me and Senku. Somebody must have left this here. And Senku comes up behind him, and he's like, that was where I came from. Oh. That makes sense, doesn't it? Taiju is trying to figure out what the hell is going on. He's like, okay, so how did you get free? Did the stone get brought away? And Senku says, yes. But... you know, it's kind of odd that we broke free at around the same time. You know, it's been almost 4,000 years, but we woke up only 6 months apart. So there must be some sort of a rational explanation behind such coincidence. So, for example, we both washed up right around here. So he leads him inside. It's like, okay, look, see, there's this nitric acid that is dripping from the ceiling, created by the bat's guano. So, and Taiju's like, did you say nitric acid? What's that?
I do love that we're getting this guy's humor back in the magazine, because you do have to love the way he just writes idiots.
One of my favorite memorable jokes from iShow 21 was the way that they so clearly separated who the idiot and the Daemon Devil Bats were from the smart people. Like, you know,
scale.
When they were going up against the Ojo White Knights, they were like, oh man, God, Sakuraba's so difficult to cover because he's so tall. And Monta's like, wait, he's tall. He's big and tall. What if Kurita covered him? And almost all the monsters were like, oh, it's a genius idea! And Jumanji and Musashi are both like, no, that never worked. He's slow as shit. What are you talking about?
You're dumb as fuck, Mumata.
So 12 people are gathered. I was like, this is the best idea ever. And just two people were like, no, that would never work. What are you talking about?
There was always that, I forget the image where it appeared. I think it was like, it must have been within the chapter, but it was when they were getting ready for like an exam, and they had to like list all the devil bats by intelligence, and you saw how like stupid heavy their team was, because there was only like three people who were above idiot, who were like above the average line, and then everyone else in a sliding scale with Taki at the very end, where you're like, this dude's
like super dumbass.
This dude's borderline needs a helmet, essentially. I don't know how he functions in day-to-day life.
And then they teach him how to pass the test by just having him put everything in football terms when suddenly he becomes a complete genius.
So stupid, but awesome.
It was like, what? Because it was, Musashi is pretty smart, Jumanji is pretty smart.
Yeah, deceptive. He was surprisingly smart.
Right. Because he was a delinquent, but he was actually pretty smart. And then Yukimitsu and Mamori and Hiruma were basically the borderline geniuses of the group.
Yeah. And then it was like, I feel like Kurita was not too far from the front.
And Monta was pretty far down.
Monta was pretty far. I feel like Senna was a little bit further ahead than he was.
Average, yeah.
And then it was like the two hobblers were there. But then at the very fucking back, it was fucking Taki. And I think even further back than that, when they did like a big like series wide scale, was Odawara, who's just like... they're like, he doesn't function without football. Like, once this season ends, I don't know what he does.
Oh, my God. I'm just remembering the idiot confrontation they had with Odawara and Taki, where they're just like, dumbass versus dumbass. And Taki's like, I'll imitate the Devil Bat Hurricane by lifting my leg up in the air and twirling like a ballerina. And Odawara's like, I'll use my butt blast to propel myself forward. And he just, like, shits his pants. And he's like, but then I tag with you and it.
I'm sorry, guys, who are listening. We're just reminiscing about Actual 21 on this podcast.
This is going to happen. Please vote for Dr. Stone in the Weekly Mug and the Shonen Jump poll so that we can reminisce about Actual 21 every week.
Now, there definitely must be, I feel, some level of trust in this series, because again, it's always been sort of a nebulous thing we're referring to series that haven't been in the magazine for that long, where they place in the magazine. But this series was second in the magazine this week after One Piece, and usually that shows some level of faith in a series. I have to feel of all the jump starts, this is the one that probably has the most momentum behind it, just because of the names that are working on it.
Possible.
It would be like, I feel like a Kishimoto series coming out, and even if it wasn't like the best thing ever, I feel like it'd be weird to cancel it.
We'll just let you do what you need, you know?
Yeah, give you your time, essentially, so. But definitely vote for this to be a jump, because there's no necessary, there's nothing that guarantees that English Jump will pick
right.
up.
Getting back to the series itself, because this is actually a really interesting chapter, because Senku brings Taiju back to their camp, he's like, okay, you know, I've actually been experimenting here, you know, explaining it in detail would be really annoying, so I'll just show you. And he gets a stone bird, and so Taiju's like, oh, I get it, you're going to put the Watchmacallit acid on there, and then the stone will rot away to revive it. And Senku's like, no, and he pours the acid over it. And literally nothing happens. He leads him into a shack where there's this big sign that says laboratory. You're the only one who's been living here. You should know that. And he's actually got just this entire bookshelf, basically, of stone birds with notes on them and the different combinations of acid in, you know, amounts and concentrations and stuff that he has been trying in order to reverse the process. And he says, we're in the realm of the fantastic here. Are they stoned through and through, or are their cells intact? I lack the proper equipment to run experiments. And Taiji's like, wait, so you mean science can't explain this? And Seki's like, no. But, you know, then we have to, we form hypotheses and we perform experiments. Science demands diligence. If only we had some booze, because I could combine the alcohol and the ethanol with the nitric acid, I could perform this thing called Nidal. It's an industrial strength corrosive agent. And Taiju's like, Senku, about what you said just now. And Senku's like, Nidal, yeah, so he reveals the grain boundary of ferrites. And, no, I don't understand that part. He just goes, if we only had some booze, like, just kind of skipped over this entire explanation he gave in order to, like, focus on this revelation. Because he's like, see, with grapes, we can make wine. And he holds up the grapes that he gathered up. And, I think that's a nice little cool moment for him, because, yeah, he had this little revelation, and they start setting to work. You know, they go through the very rigorous process of preparing wine, and we get this long montage of them making stuff. They go through, like, the distillation process, which is really difficult because they've got to create ceramics, and Senku struggles with doing that properly, and like seasons pass. They go through the winter. Taiju's like growing this big manly beard as he continues to gather stuff, and then he's like, Yuzuriha's gonna get freaked out when she sees my beard. So
I love this gag, because it's almost silly the way it happens. First and foremost, I also love that when they're tasting wine, for some fucking reason, the dude's made a fucking, like, wine glass out of stone. Like, he couldn't... Like, he's just like, I'm so intelligent, I would not be, like, degraded to using a cup for wine, please.
Taiju's got a regular-ass cup, and Senku is, you know, putting the lower fingers up.
He does, he has it. It's like, bitch, this is fucking, like, toilet wine. What are you doing?
But I love, not going to be very good.
But I love the gag of him, like, coming out for the wilderness with a fish he's just speared up with this big fucking beard. And he's like, oh, I can't have this beard. She won't like it. And then he just gets rid of it by stabbing him with mushrooms. Like, he just stabs the mushrooms.
Basically, he waxes his face, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, uses, I think he loses a
clam.
Oh,
it's a clam. He's shaving him, and he just
in order
gets
to
really
rip
shaved
off.
He just, oh my god,
off a beard.
Oh, I don't know why I just thought they were magic mushrooms. That's far more horrifying. He just snapped them off.
He does it really quickly too, because he just like rips up this entire full beard.
Oh man.
There's a little reaction panel where Taiju's entire face is swollen up and Senku is busting a gut laughing.
Oh my god, that feels like that would hurt so much.
It really would.
Ugh. Alright.
More of a montage with them experimenting, and eventually they manage to break a bird out with the right combination of stuff. And Senku says, let this be a lesson, you big oaf. It's not that there are some things even science can't explain. Rather, we search for rules and principles behind the inexplicable and apply good old diligence and effort. That's all that science really is. And there's this big panel with the bird breaking out of the stone and immediately flying off into the sky.
It's a very cool panel, actually. I like that a lot. This is a huge moment. I mean, this is only a 2-chapter-long series thus far, but this is a huge moment in the dilemma that they're in right now, is they've now figured out how to fix the stone thing, at least for an animal. You know, who knows if this will apply, but I mean, this is a huge moment. I love the way it's kind of described too, of this whole lesson about what science really is, and him saying like, no, it's not about, like, there's something, it's not that there are things science can't explain, it's that we haven't figured it out and we must apply due diligence and effort and solve it, and that's what science is. And it's portrayed as this, you know, miraculous moment of this bird taking off into the air, and this giant 2-page spread.
Senku mentions that it's been a year since they started experimenting, so he says, you know what, you know, the grapes were your idea to begin with, Taiju, so you should decide who we save first. And Taiju's immediately like, the answer is obvious, and showing the image of usury has.
Sylvester Stallone is like, hey, thanks for saving me from the rock there, guys. I feel like you had a girlfriend you might want to do it. Yeah, whatever. I can be a scientist.
I mean, you know,
I can give you, like, inspirational Rocky. Like, the next time you have a montage, you can sing one of my songs. Oh, it's on fire. Strong dead.
I'm not a singer. I'm just the actor.
Yeah, you know, I don't... You know, Disney wanted me to be in a movie, but I said, you know, fuck you. I'm not, you know, give me a lot of money. And then they said, no, it's, you know, it's a children's movie. You can't say the F word this many times. And I was like, you know, fuck that old dude. I should have won the Oscar. But anyway, I feel as though my sanity's...
Guys, where are you going?
Hello?
I can't find you. There's nothing but jungle out there.
I guess it's time for me to get a clam and chop off my beard and then make some toilet wine to free the others. Like, he's an actual genius. He's a genius. Like, he's like, I guess I'll figure everything out faster than they did. God damn it. We should have kept him around.
Anyway, time to get back to my award-winning Hollywood career.
It's time to make Predator 6, whatever I'm on. Like, even he's forgotten.
What do I do?
What movie am I doing? Whatever. I'm taking Terminator now. Fuck you. You're not around to do it. I can do it now.
Oh, boy. Great chapter, though. Really,
I'm going to be the Star Wars.
I'll be the Star Warrior.
He just shows up in Rey's outfit, his body literally exploding out of it with every movement. He's like, oh, Finn, you're so handsome and hot. I can't wait to make out with you, as he's making out with the stone John Boyega, like, oh. They pop back up, like, what did we unleash?
We literally just, like, went around the corner and expected you to follow us.
He's so stupid, but at the same time, he's already figured out how to make the toilet wine.
I can't work when I'm sober. Adrian!
Hey, you think I'm just gonna work when I'm sober?
Anyway, I did really like this chapter. I was very surprised, but pleasantly surprised, to see that they so quickly seemed to get the solution to hopefully start expanding the cast. Yes. But I really thought that this was going to be a little bit of a longer struggle for them to get to this point. It was like, no, second chapter, we found this way to help free other humans, and it really feels like a big accomplishment for them, despite the fact that, yeah, it's only been built up over the course of, like, a chapter and a half.
Yeah, and in one way you're like, huh, it's very surprising, but, like, what we kind of had to sit here and realize is that we're not actually sure quite yet what the entire premise of this series is going to be. Like,
yeah,
from the first chapter you'd say, oh, it'll be this mystery of figuring out what happened to them with the stone and finding a way to undo it, but if this chapter kind of is setting a precedent of, hey, chapter 3, we're going to save your girlfriend and maybe start saving people. It's a chance to say, hey, maybe there's going to be more to this than just what meets the initial eye. So I'm excited because this chapter did kind of deliver with what essentially it accomplished. It felt like a big, exciting moment. And I love all the humor and kind of playfulness that went into it. The cast is, like, the two leads are starting to really grow on me as they've kind of established what kind of characters they are.
Right, but the double act that they've got going on.
Yeah, and it's just so nice seeing Inagaki's humor in the magazine again. Like, that dude's just so funny. So I'm really excited for Chapter 3, and I really hope that this series stays in the recap, or in the magazine, I should say. So if you want to make sure it stays in there, the thing you have to do, guys, is you have to vote the survey. Which, you know, just got thrown out there. You know, if they ask in the survey for a question for the Family Feud game, I'm not saying Honey Mustard should be your answer, but I'm just saying put Honey Mustard down. Let's see what happens. You know what would be great is if the Jump Team fucked with me and, like, their question this week was, what was your favorite, like, ingredient in Food Wars? So it's a legitimate answer to put in. And I'm like, oh, you got me.
Damn it, this isn't a troll answer anymore.
Damn it, it's a legitimate answer now. You win this time, Shonen Jump. They're like, we've won all of them thus far. You're like, very true!
All right. Moving on to our other Jumpstart, Hungry Marie. Chapter 3, Snack Time. So, last time we saw that, you know, Taiga's personality was present in the body of Marie Therese. And then at the end of the chapter, all of a sudden, it was reversed. Taiga's body showed up. Marie Therese was there. It's her personality taking over. And I love the way that this is explained, because there's, like, a little recap Because at first, Anna and her father are very confused. And it's like, here's a recap. They tried to bring back Marie Therese, but their stupid neighbor's brat turned into Therese, but only her body. Now a guy looks like Therese's back, but inside Tiger's body. And then in the corner, it's like, the person giving the explanation is a bear. Like, a little bear that has, in writing across his chest, bear.
Yeah, that's basically the that's basically the situation.
It's a bear. So Anna and her father give tea and cake to Therese in Taiga's body, and
sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. I want everyone to do it for this issue, because I just went to the survey, and the question this week is, where do you read Shonen Jump? Honey Mustard to show up on there as an answer. What's like, I guess a lot of people read Shonen Jump while eating Honey Mustard, or while at the Honey Mustard Factory. I don't know what this means.
50% of the weekly manga recap team does not approve of trolling the weekly Shonen Jump survey.
It's only once to make our point known. We stole this format before you.
Okay. So we see a bit inside of Taiga's head because Therese is, you know, just enjoying the tea and stuff. And Taiga is like shouting at her inside of her head, going, it's like, Sagami is talking to you. You should say something back. You should be polite to her. Come on. So, you know, just a little bit more insight into how this whole thing works is that they are both seemingly present inside of the mind at once. But when one takes over, that's when the body switches. And Therese is kind of freaking out over the angel pie that she's eating because she's like, oh, the path to heaven. Oh, look, mushrooms inside. It's so delicious. Like, her clothes are exploding off. Taiga says, like, that's crap for us commoners. It's not actually high-end food, whatever.
Yeah, it'd be like me being like, ooh, these delicious, what do you call them? Double stuffed Oreo? It's so exotic. It's got such a long name. Like, we have peep-flavored ones over there that no one's gonna eat because they're disgusting.
Anna starts to react to Taiga's behavior by going like, oh, she's so cute. So we're starting to see this really weird love triangle to develop, it seems. Therese finishes reacting to how wonderful the tea and cakes are and stuff, and then Father says, so, why are you in that body? And she goes, well, you see, and then her body just suddenly morphs back and Taiga's in control of Therese's body instead. And Father's like, what the fuck's going on? Come on! What are you doing here? And Taiga tries to immediately start calling out mentally to Marie Therese to try and call her out. And she then she's like, hey, your personal space, could you like back up a bit?
Yeah, she's like kind of uncomfortable, not for nothing.
Okay, perfect.
Wensleydale has a good suggestion. She's French, she should be Benzai. She's like, oh, these double stuffed
marshmallows. Oh, yeah.
They're so delicious. Oh, the pie of heaven.
I'm going to go pose next to this Porto's ass now.
I'm going to Yeah, you just described all of Benzai's Twitter at this point. French gibberish and porn just posing next to porn stars' assholes.
Oh, God. Anyway. Taiga says, she says she's full, so she's going to take a nap now. So, basically, Marie Therese is just being a little brat about the whole thing. Father tries to get Taiga to swear to secrecy. You can't tell anyone who you really are on the inside. And Taiga's like, well, not like anyone would actually believe me anyway. And also, how can I return to my original body? And Father says, still don't understand the situation at all. You can't tell your family, especially now the guy's coming here. Nobody must know, and most definitely not the pirate hag from your house. Pirate hag. That's a wonderful way of describing someone. Yeah, and Taiga's like, well, come on, how, that's literally impossible. That I can't just tell her about the situation. This is going to be impossible for us to keep a secret. Anyway, who the hell is coming here that you're talking about? And, Father's like, well, they're my superiors, but I can't give you any details. And Taiga says, why are you bothered to keep a secret at this point if you want me to be involved in all of this? Anna comes into the room while they're arguing with each other, says, Ranjo just called, said they can't make it today because of the heavy rain. So, Taiga tries to leave, and Father's like, no, I can't let you go as long as you're late at your ease. Then turn me back. I can't. And more arguing. Taiga complains, I'm a princess, I'm a high school boy. I can't even pee while standing anymore, let alone go to school. Anna offers, don't worry, Taiga. Ladies back then used to pee while standing all the time.
I love this response, because this was 100% my thought process of, that's not the... Wait, really? Like, they got so distracted by this history fact of, like, wait, for reals? Show me! And it's like, well, if you follow me into our time back machine, I'll show you there, Pima Sherman.
Come along, Sherman.
They go back and talk to all fucking 1970 toilets.
Everyone's suddenly drawn very poorly because they have no...
I love the idea that fucking...
budget. You see, Sherman, ladies back in the day would...
They keep going back in time to old fucking toilets and bathrooms. Look, she's peeing standing up. Like, get out of here! Like, no.
You see, Sherman, back in ancient times, before plumbing, people would just go in the bushes and crouch down. But
they'd let the ocean take it away. Or so I learned from third grade Mystery Mountain. Like, you sure learned a lot from third grade Mystery Mountain, didn't you, Professor? Like, boy howdy. So I learned about cornflakes and all the amazing things in our world. Also, those annoying robots that couldn't figure out the logic puzzles. It wasn't my fault, you robots are stupid.
Eventually, I'll be voiced by Ty Burrell.
What a day.
Okay. Anna leads Taiga off, and she offers a more in-depth explanation to see, okay, Marie-Thérèse Charlotte de France was the daughter of Marie Antoinette. She was known as Madame Royale, last princess of the French monarchy, and my ancestors served them. And Taiga's getting kind of distracted, and so she's like, oh yeah, Marie Antoinette. You mean, if there's no bread, let them eat cake. He's like, oh, well, no, she didn't actually say that. More historically accurate depiction of the story of Marie Antoinette than a lot that I've seen throughout fiction. So, and that's surprising given the body swapping thing. So, you know, she offers like, okay, you know, the people rushed into the palace of Versailles, killed a number of retainers. Princess Therese was 10 years old. Her parents were executed later. By the time she was released at the age of 18, she'd lost her words and her smile.
Tell me a lie.
Tell me a lie. Say that you won't go.
You think one of the other things I've lost in addition to my dead parents? I've lost my smile. And that's why, Brett, I'm not going to job to you at WrestleMania, so fuck off. Suck it. It was as though she had become a completely different person, and that is the well-known story. But the truth is that it really was a different person. The person they could find at the tower was a body double, and the real princess escaped all the way here to Japan. Sure. Okay. But due to long journey and disease, she didn't manage to live for long. She died in this church, which is, I guess, the ghost that has been seen all of this time. So Taiga says, you know what? Maybe my grandmother can do something about this. My grandma is a Daoshi. She knows her way around dead souls, so maybe she can turn me back. And, so Taiga just goes into the temple and just greets his grandmother in Princess Therese's body. He's like, hi, Granny. And his grandmother turns around really honestly and he's like, oh, you keep popping up. You never know when to give up, you disgusting Sagamia ghost. She takes out a freaking glowing sword.
Yeah,
I like the detail that she puts on sunglasses to use the glowing sword. starts to attack her. Seems to launch a blast of energy from the sword, in fact. And, Taiga has to hide behind around the corner while, his grandmother is hunting after them. All of a sudden, there's a voice that goes, Donut! 3-6 over the body again. Very simple-minded, isn't she? Because she's like, I want the donuts.
I mean,
she goes over the
it was how we were introduced to her, with her on, like, the top of the church being like, food, pastries.
I'm hungry.
I want pastries. I want bubblegum candy.
I want donuts.
She's MC Chris from fucking Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
She goes over to her and is like, donut. Om nom. So, this is the working theory now that Taiga has. Like, I guess whenever she gets hungry, she comes out. Following the Bourgeois Revolution, she was confined to the tower by herself. So, okay. And she tries to address Drazen. Is like, so are you just hungry? And that's it. She just switches back when she's hungry.
That'd be great if she, like, turned and she's like, no, I'm Hungry Marie.
Hides.
High five.
Hungry, I'm dead.
Starts high-fiving everybody as she runs around the room. Yeah!
So you're just like, oh.
Fuck it. I hate this so much.
Oh my god. And Anna kind of comes over to the table. It's like, oh wow, these donuts look so delicious. What disgraceful behavior, Anna. Oh, I mean, yeah, Princess Therese, they're all for you, of course.
Enjoy.
And, Princess Marie Therese starts enjoying the donuts in Taiga's body. And Taiga's like, oh, come on. What a weirdo. And as soon as she's done eating, Taiga switches back into Therese's body. And Therese now says, I'm full, going to bed. And of course, this leaves Taiga inside of Therese's body, and his grandmother is there with the sword again. So, yeah. And narration goes, and so it begins, sweet and complicated with a hungry princess caught in the middle of it. This is my love story. And yeah, now they've Taiga is kind of stuck in the church because, obviously, Therese won't cooperate with him, so if he wasn't asleep, he has to do it in the church. He's stuck there. He's basically replaced her as the ghost now. And, yeah.
You know, it's, I think this is a funny series. The premise does have at least a little bit to it, with the unique twist of, it's not just a gender swap thing, it's like the double personalities in reverse. And I do find it kind of a funny concept. I don't know if it has all of, like, the necessary elements to feel, like, outstanding. Like, I still feel like there's almost a little bit missing from it. But it has ultimately kind of covered what I wanted out of this. Like, it has a premise that's unique enough. It's been funny. I think maybe what it's just missing is characters who are a little bit more defined in what makes them funny. Mm-hmm. A lot of, like, the humor right now has just been kind of, like, silly reactions, but I think outside of the dad of the main lead female character being obscenely cheap, I feel like the main cast needs a bit more like established kind of traits about what's going to be the comedic playoff for them.
Yes. I mean, I've definitely enjoyed this, but I would not be too upset if we didn't get any more of it from now on. So
I would like to see more. If I had my choice, I would definitely like to see more of this. But, yeah, I will not be heartbroken if it doesn't stay around. But I would like to. I want to establish that. I would like to see it stay around. This has been one of the more enjoyable jump starts for me.
Okay. Let's get into more serious stuff with The Promised Neverland. It's the chapter title is all the way at the end. Hang on. Chapter 30, Resistance. So, last time, Norman revealed to Emma and Ray that he was not going to hide in the woods. He was too concerned that there was even the chance of security being increased around the compound and reduce everyone's chances of escaping. So, we see Norman officially doing this to everyone in the household, wishing them well. One of the things that really distracted me the first time I saw this, because you see, Ray is not with the group. Emma is, and she's obviously looking very upset about the whole thing, barely hiding it. Gilda looks like she's looking in concern over at Emma. And Don is doing... I don't know what Don is doing in that bit, in that wide panel. Because he's kind of going, hey! Like, is he threatening to beat up
one of the kids.
But... I guess it's him doing like his like shonen, super excited, like you go and I'll be with you in my heart or so. I don't know. I don't know what he's doing. I think he's starting to beat up a child. And I'm pretty excited about this new taking for this new direction for Don. Old kid punting Don, which doesn't sound like a great nickname at the start, but it's got legs.
So, are we back?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. So it was just something that really distracted me, seeing the bizarre face he was making. Because the next time you see him, he's also looking concerned over at Emma, but that's not what he's doing the first time he shows up. So.
Yeah.
Emma explains that Ray did not want to send Norman off. He's basically too upset. And we get a little flashback to Emma and Ray discussing what Norman's done. You know, Emma is obviously, you know, really upset. It's like, we can't let him do this. But Ray just says, we can't stop it anymore. It's impossible. Demons are probably at the gate already. Mom's going to be watching. Norman's completely prepared to die. And he's, you know, kind of like grabbing at his face and stuff. He's like, I'm sure he doesn't want it. I'm sure he's terrified. And it's like, then we should save him. And Ray says, look, if we do something stupid and get caught, our plan could be leaked to the demons. It'll make Norma's death truly meaningless. So, we can't do anything. And he's clearly frustrated and feels completely powerless at this point, which I like the fact that they react so differently to this, because we see Emma, you know, desperately trying to lash out and do something, and Ray just kind of completely shuts down throughout the chapter instead. Mm. And he was always the one with the answers up until this point. So it's cool to see this. So Emma is thinking to herself, like, yeah, we can't do anything. We can just, see him off. We can't let him die in vain. I get that, but I don't want to understand. I need to grab him. If I let him go now, Norman's death is certain. Not dying in vain, that's not the issue. I can't let him die, period. And she rushes forward on her crutches and tackles Norman, just grabs around him, and she whispers in his ear, I'll distract Mom, just run. And she whips out the disabling device, holds it up to Norman's ear while she also gets ready to stomp her hurt leg onto the ground. And Norman kind of flips her around and, like, suplexes her almost to the ground. And he starts to just yell at her. And they're covered just like, come on, you're being too reckless. You've gone too far. You shouldn't be doing this. And Norman quickly realizes what's going on. Like, you were trying to slam your injured foot into the floor to distract Mom. You had the device. If I'd reacted one moment slower, you would have used that on me and made me escape. So, and Emma's like, I don't want this to happen. I won't let you go. And of course, the little kids are confused because they're speaking in just vague enough terms that, you know, it kind of seems like Emma's just upset that he's leaving. Which is a nice touch.
It is. I was worried. It's a little too on the nose, but I guess at this point, since Mom's like, we're not going to play games anymore. You know what's up.
Right.
I know what's up. I guess they really don't need to be too coy about things.
Yeah, because there's just a bunch of stupid kids aside from them, so.
Yeah.
Norman's thinking to himself, like, come on, you've got to think about what's actually going on. There's a reason that I haven't used the device and all this stuff. And, they're also in a nice touch. Both, he's like covering over her hand while pressing it to the floor, the one that holds the device, so they've got it completely covered up between the two of them, so Isabella can't see it. Norman says, like, you know, come on, just understand how I feel. I want to send you off with a smile. And I was like, no, I can't do that, especially if you don't want to go. And Norman, of course, remembers, like, freaking out of the bathroom, like, I want to live. Before they had their big powwow before. And Norman just kind of reflects, like, you know, this is the way Emma is. You know, she's just true to herself. She's reckless, she's naive, she's immature, but she's true to herself, and she's genuine. And Emma doesn't realize how happy I was with her feelings and consideration for me. That's why I was always able to smile, even though it was tough and I was scared. And that's why I can smile as I go to meet my death. And he puts a hand to her face before Isabella comes in, and he's got this really creepy kind of content smile on his face as she comes in. And obviously, like, they're both wearing these kind of very fake smiles as he's like, okay, come on, it's time to go. And Isabelle's like, yo, calm down, Emma. I know it's you're sad, but you should calm down.
It's no use. Give up. Stop trying.
Norman also gives a final word to Donegal. He's like, hey, you know, take care of Emma and Ray for me. And as he's going down the hall, he sees Ray just leaning against a door, and they don't say anything. They just kind of exchange a look, and that's it. Like, no gestures or anything.
Ray's like, if you still had your baby memories, we could talk telepathically. And I tell you, that hat's out of style. I like trilbies now. There's a lot of people shit on trilbies because they think it's just what losers wear, but they don't realize that that's what real style is about, being avant-garde.
You've got a very narrow head. You could probably actually pull off a trilby.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it would be difficult for me. I'd have to, like, cut out the top of it so that my badass hairdo would go over the brim.
People said My Chemical Romance haircuts went away, but those people don't realize that I'm actually on the return trip back to those. You know, things go in cycle and fashion, and I'm on the return swing as you guys are on the downswing.
By the time all of you start to realize that and start to cut your hair like this, I'll be like, no, now crew cuts are in.
I'm like, now everything's about...
I'm not a trendsetter.
Everything's about giant red mohawks now.
Now it's time to bring back mullets. It's getting more and more terrible.
It's time to bring back hairs that looks like a roller coaster with a time
now train. Now it's time to bring back man buns.
A mohawk with a man bun on the back.
A dreadlock mohawk.
Nothing cooler than a white guy with dreadlocks.
Oh, God. Norman and Emma exchange final words. You know, I like how it's just Emma barely being able to respond to this stuff that Norman says. Like, hey, Emma. He's like, yeah, thanks. Yeah. Sorry for tricking you. Yeah. Don't get hurt again. Yeah. Don't be reckless. Yeah. And it's going to be okay. Don't give up.
Yeah.
And she's just barely holding it together while he gives her one last hug and then waves everybody goodbye. And, Emma is just thinking to herself as normally is, sorry, I couldn't send you off with a smile. I couldn't show you a happy face. Norman, thanks so much. We join Isabella and Norman as they are walking off. Emma just collapses to the ground once Norman is gone, just bawling while the kids are confusedly trying to comfort her. And Isabella's like, your suitcase is empty, right? Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'm going to die anyway, so am I. Isabella says, I knew from the beginning that you wouldn't run away because you're a kind child and honorable. You're doing the right thing. Now I can ship out Ray and Emma maturely. Until the end of their chosen time, they can live happily inside the house. And Norman says, so are you happy? And Isabelle is surprised at first that he says this, but he says, yes, I am happy, because I was able to meet you. So she leads him through the gate into the ominous dark room where there is, there's like the same truck waiting that there was before. And she says, you know, wait here for a minute. And I was like, okay, well, this is it. You know, it's happening. And then Norman sees something and goes, huh? And we cut away.
Interesting. There's also another thing that's kind of foreshadowed here that we don't get that, where he specifically
we're thinking about the same thing here, but go ahead.
When Mom notes, like, your suitcase is empty, he's like, yeah, almost.
Mm-hmm.
We still know that the last thing he found before his, like, big change of opinion kind of came about was that pen or whatever it was that Krone left behind.
Mm-hmm.
So Norman knows something, and again, I still think we're at this point now where don't think that he's dead. I don't know what his fate ultimately is going to be, but I believe that Norman still has a very prominent role in this story to have told. But yeah, it's interesting that it ends with him being like, huh? Because it doesn't sound like the face of somebody who's expected. I mean, he's seen what happens when they kill someone.
Yeah.
So, clearly something different's happening.
Norman is gone now, and we see, like, the chapter ends on a really great note of, you know, the day starting, and Emma is trying to, like, put on a happy face now for people, you know, saying good morning to everyone. She says good morning to Ray as he passes by her, and he doesn't do anything. He just kind of touches her shoulder as he's walking past her. And then she goes over to an empty spot at the table, and she starts to say good morning to Norman. And it's not the fact that she's like, you know, like in denial or anything. It's the thing that really gets me is her face as she's doing it. Uh-huh. This like hopeless smile on her face. So. There is one other thing I want to make a note of. It's this very minor detail that I am probably reading too much into. But when it comes to this series, maybe not. Way back on in the English Shonen Jump, it's on page 73. Below, at the same time as Emma is tackling or trying to tackle Norman to the ground. We cut from Emma grabbing Norman back to Ray, who is slumped over, and then suddenly he starts to look at his hands. And I'm wondering if that's an implication that he realizes something. And
it's
maybe
possible.
That's the meaning of him showing up in the hallway to look at Norman.
It's very possible. I wonder if it was meant to be that, if it would be more significant. Like, in my mind, I look at that and I'm like, maybe that's him realizing I should be there to say goodbye to him. But it is very possible that maybe he did figure out something. And that is like a moment.
I mean, it's a very small, it's a very small little thing, but it's just something that's like, why is that there? You know, because it's not just something just to take up space. So, intrigue continues. Like, no matter where this frickin' series goes, something happens that we're not expecting. And it's always fun, so.
It's very exciting, though, and that's kind of the important part of it.
Rudor in the chat is saying that it's him realizing that Emma's taken the device.
Oh, that would make sense.
Which is entirely possible, because we see him realize his hands are empty, and then the next thing we see is that Emma's trying to use it. So that is entirely possible. Okay, so let's move on then to Black Clover.
I think we're...
Black Clover. This is where we're going to be putting Seven Deadly Sins.
Yes, until World Trigger comes back, and we can return to our usual alphabetical lineup. Which will happen one day, any day now. We're going to be adding Seven Deadly Sins to the recap now. Sorry, Annalise, who got all excited and already started screaming Black Clover. We're going to be talking about some Seven Deadly Sins, and I'm going to apologize in advance, because I vaguely recall what's going on here.
There are so many characters who I didn't know about 10 chapters ago that were only introduced in this whole thing. So, yeah.
And they're still within this flashback sort of thing to what happened with, like, the original Ten Commandments and everything like that. So, fuck, I have no idea how to recap half of this. So there's, like, a bunch of different characters talking about trying to, like, open the gate to heaven. And I don't know who this one girl is who's seen, or maybe this is a guy. I don't know. They're seraphim, so they're pretty, you know,
androgynous. The light-haired seraphim that's witnessing Melaleuska and Gowther?
Yeah.
Or Meliscula.
I don't know what her name is. Regardless, she sees them. And this is actually interesting to me, because she notes they're the Ten Commandments. And they actually are given commandments of their thing. Like, Gowther is, thou shalt not covet. And Meliscula is, thou shalt keep Sabbath the holy day. Or, thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath day. And I was like, that's awesome that they're actually applying those. There's so many, like, that's the lamest, one of the lamest ones. Thou shalt keep Sabbath day holy. It's like, yeah, sure. It applies so much to you. But they note that the gate of heaven is, like, eroding away. Fuck, there's, like, a bunch of fairies. There's so many characters here.
There's a guy who looks like Bon.
Yeah, there's a guy who kind of looked like Bon, and for a moment I also was like, maybe it's Hendrickson who wants to, like, fight against them. And then there's this giant that he basically, like, cuts, like, you know, damages in a single attack, and he fights against one of the fairies and then stabs him. And they're basically trying to keep them away from the light of divine grace. And then Bond slash Hendrickson slash person I don't know says, like, you know, we happen to share a goal with them, and that goal is the one thing and one thing alone. He just kind of repeats himself. What? Why does he do that?
Because Crunchyroll's scans of Seven Deadly Sins do this sometimes. I don't know. I've seen it a couple of times happen while I've been reading it, because, it just does that sometimes.
Yeah,
because
it's dialogue at one page.
Dialogue will get repeated in word bubbles by mistake. It just happens in some of Crunchyroll scans for Seven Deadly Sins.
You know what?
Someone's got a bad editor, I think.
I bet if they had the talents of the best letterer in the business, Annalise Chrisman, that they wouldn't have that issue. But, hey, they don't, so that's their loss. Anyway, some fucking fairy chick is like, Melodius, protect everybody! And I think it's Melodius, I'm not sure. There's like four
Meliodas.
People who look like him at this point, so...
It is Meliodas at this point.
Okay. They go...
That's King saying that. King and Diane in their, you know, quantum-leapt bodies are going off.
Oh, it's, okay. Thing. So they're rushing off. They get interrupted by Galther, who, like, says boo and scares them, and introduces himself. And that's when he says, please forgive me, I mean no harm. And I guess is this Diane, or is that... No, I guess this was
giant is Diane, King is the fairy.
Yeah, so King says, you're not Galther, are you? And that's where we end the chapter.
I think the thing that seems to tip them off, because at first Galther, like, gives this, like, I know things about yourselves that you yourselves do not even know. So how's that? I sound like a villain, right? No. But then he starts acting all happy. He's like, oh, thanks for, you know, the reaction, though. I love doing that. It's so fun. Oh, I bet it meant you no harm. So King is like, wait a minute. You're showing a sense of humor and emotions. You're not Galther. Galther would have made us forget stuff for no reason.
He would have been fucking rude and fucking obtrusive for no reason.
So... I'm going to be so, God, all the freaking times we could have, like, chosen to pick up Seven Deadly Sins, it's in this whole quantum leap sequence.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely need to, like, reread the last, like, volume and a half, essentially, for next week.
Several times.
I'm just, like, I'm trying to remember what's happening. But yeah, it seems fine enough. Let's get out of this flashback, though. I do, I don't know why. I'm so tickled, though, by the fact that they actually are attaching fucking actual commandments to the Ten Commandments.
Truth!
If they were that that distinct, it'd be amazing, but there's so many fucking commandments, you're like, it's so dumb.
Once we get to the seven holy virtues, Chris.
That would work. The Ten Commandments sounds cool, but the actual Ten Commandments are not nearly as, like, thematically
not great for,
cool.
Not great for naming a group of bad guys, yeah.
Yeah, when you get into, like, yeah, like, four of these are just about honoring God in different ways.
I mean, I do appreciate that they're doing this whole thing to set up, hey, so, once they're done fighting off the demon clan, yo, there's that goddess clan, they're a bunch of dicks too, so.
Let's fuck these guys.
Yeah. Let's go over to Black Clover, then. Page 101, I'm home. So, Vanessa had turned the tables on the Witch Queen with the power of the Red Thread of Fate, the playful cat thing that caused stuff to get Dormammu'd. I've come to bargain. We pray up where we left off last time, where, you know, the Red Thread of Fate only works on people that Vanessa has strong bonds with, and she has no bonds with the Witch Queen whatsoever. We have a flashback from there to the Queen, and Vanessa as a child. And it's like, look, I used thread magic to make a doll. And the Witch Queen's like, yeah, great. And Vanessa's like, I want to use magic to make everybody smile. Oh, I'm sure you'll manage it, Vanessa. Oh my god, this kid. and so, the Witch Queen goes, I guess I sought perfection so fiercely that I forgot something important. There is a strength that can be gained from unvarnished feelings, precisely because they are imperfect. Magic that cannot come into being under my supervision, because it is free and imperfect. Sure, why not?
Why, yeah. Sure. All right,
fine.
These
are imperfections that make us perfect, Chris.
As many songs have taught me before.
Yes. So, with that cliche sentiment out of the way, the Witch Queen's like, fine, you've defeated me, do whatever you want. And, strangely enough, Noelle is like, we won, gets all emotional and runs over and leaps into Vanessa's arms.
I mean, it makes sense that she does that. I mean, she was the one who was just about to be beheaded and did in a couple alternate
You saved
realities.
My eyes!
So it does make sense that she does that. I can easily use this scene into some hot fanfic, Nick.
The thing about it is that, like, I don't know, I don't feel... I've never gotten a Vanessa and Noelle specifically have strong bonds in the Black Bulls. Is
no, I don't think they do. And I don't know if this has necessarily ever been distinctly kind of Noelle's role either, of being like this emotional in this way.
No,
but
I think it's a nice moment for her to have, considering she's always been the kind of tsundere of the group too. So to have this genuine moment where she just, you know, is so happy that they're safe and together, it's nice, but it's just like, it kind of throws me as like, okay, Noelle. Yeah.
It makes more sense to me based on the fact that we just had a chapter where she was about to be executed by Asta. I think if there wasn't that moment before and this happened, I'd be a bit more skeptical of it.
Finderl, meanwhile, is on the ground, kind of half conscious.
That's what I want to note. What the fuck is everyone else doing? So Finderl's like, Asta has buttholes for eyeballs and is just going,
Asta has two Yumas making duck faces coming out of his face.
He has two sphincters shooting out where his eyeballs should be, and he's just going,
I've just shaken off puppet magic expressions.
And then fucking Ladris is alive, super shoveled up, and he's just like, fweet? What does that sound effect even mean? Is he whistling?
I think that's supposed to be him going, phew.
Maybe. I don't know why. Like, I guess the onomatopoeia doesn't sound like that sound so much to me, so I just imagine him going like, FRIT! Like, he's like, I make sounds now! If I can't be evil, I'll at least be eccentric! Woo-woo-woo! I'm Police Academy man! I'm a rocket ship!
Yeah, we see all the people reacting that are important, which is why fans will get the panel. And then the Witch Queen kind of recovers, you know, gets her hat back on, has birds flocking around her again. And suddenly Nero lands on her shoulder and, you know, pecks at her earring. And, the Witch Queen seems to recognize him briefly.
Has Nero always had little devil horns on him?
I think so.
Have we not always then, I guess, made the connection that's like the Demon King, maybe?
Well, he first showed up when Asta got his powers, didn't he?
Yeah, I guess that would make sense. I feel like Annalise is...
Oh, wait,
I feel like Annalise suggested this exact...
Nero is one of the birds that is attracted to people with no magic, right?
Yes, I think so.
I think that's what his initial introduction was. He has always had the hair of horns, and Nero's always done that. It's very wide on my shoulder, but Nero always does this. All the powerful people have mini companions. That's a good point. Vanessa's cat sticks around from this point on.
Just hangs out.
It's not like, and now that the red thread of fate is saved, you know, it just sticks around like her familiar on her shoulder. So yeah, we've got another female character that's got a constant reverse mount thing. Nero is specifically picking at a stone on her earring, which, after everyone's back in the Witch Queen's palace, she removes and is like, this is the magic stone you mentioned, and I don't need it, so you can have it. And Finral's like, oh, sweet. Although he says, We just got the magic stone without a fuss. I bet Yami will compliment us for that. What lack of fuss are you talking about, Max? You nearly died. You got crucified and we're about to get killed. That was easy. No, it wasn't.
Ah, another perfectly easy, no thing to talk about mission.
Asta says, so the Eye of the Midnight Sun wants these, but why? Who are they? And the Witch Queen says, well, that stone is a type of magic eye that amplifies the mana of its wearer. The only ones to truly master their use were the Elf Tribe. The origins of the Eos were unclear. However, they are a race that possessed great mana and lived in what is now called the Forsaken Realm several centuries ago. Finro makes the odd comment of, how old is this lady anyway? Her skin's way too good for that.
During International Women's History Month. Really, Finral? Really?
Is this just like Finral's chapter to make
stupid comments?
Missing the point observations?
He's like, whoa, check out all these birds!
Oh my god, I just realized you're skirtless like a peacock!
Oh my god, Asta was controlled by puppet magic! Yeah, we handled that.
I know, yes.
Holy shit, a cat!
Wait a minute, Mars is here! Oh my god. The Witch Queen then says, each individual elf had extraordinarily high mana. Many of them were equal to me, but humans outnumbered them. They fought. They were annihilated. That girl Fauna, her third eye, that's forbidden magic. However, the girl wasn't the one to activate that magic. It was someone else. Ordinary humans are unable to meddle with forbidden magic. Activating a forbidden spell requires an enormous amount of mana and some sort of sacrifice. The ancient demon was also top level forbidden magic, activated by the leader of the elf tribe. Okay, so... I get the impression here that maybe those flashbacks we've been seeing are people being exterminated by humans, elves, maybe, connection maybe to Leashed. Fauna, okay, has the forbidden magic eye. He says, Finral even makes a joke of, we're getting a ton of amazing new intel. Report time, I will become a reporting fiend.
Aika Noel has nothing to say, but it looks like her eyes are getting crossed. Like, she's like, I can't understand all of this. What's happening?
The Witch Queen specifically says, you know, maybe the Eye of the Midnight Sun could be descended from the Elf Tribe. So, there you go. Then she goes on to say, so Asta, those two swords you have, they are the ruined remains of the magic swords that were used by the elf leader. Asta then goes, what does that mean? Like, what the fuck do you think it means? They're the ruined remains of the magic swords used by the elf tribe leader. What the fuck are you talking about? That's the easiest to understand part of her entire explanation.
There's moments where Asta's kind of like inability to process things, like, and just interrupts Shonen cadence is admirable because it's kind of funny that he just doesn't go along with it. And then there are times where they're just like, God damn it, you fucking get your shit together, kid. Like, this is ridiculous.
Like, yes, it's weird that a grimoire chose you and that it is connected to all this stuff. But also, yo, it's the freaking five-leafed clover thing. We know it's a special tome. So, okay, fine. And he literally, like, this information flood is such that it is demonstrated by him, like, an explosion comes out of the top of his skull, and then he falls over. Like, he doesn't understand how to, like, literally, one of them says, I think Fenrir says it, Asta's head couldn't keep up with the conversation, and it exploded. To which Vanessa says, it's because he's dumb. He can't handle anymore. He's dumb. I mean, at least it's saying it for me.
Yeah.
Like, God. So, yeah. The Witch Queen says, more answers will probably be revealed the more you oppose the Eye of the Midnight Sun. Okay, fine. Time goes by. Mars and Ladros are going to go back to the Diamond Kingdom, which is explained by, I think, Fandle saying, so you're really going back to the Diamond Kingdom. you know, whatever, exposition speak. So Mara says, okay, well, the Witch Queen sealed the effects of puppet's blood into this medicine. I'll pass it off as a longevity medicine and give it to the king. Then I'll control him and I'll remake the time. This is...
Now, it...
This is a villain's methodology.
Yeah, I was like, I get what the implication is, like, the Diamond Kingdom's become more evil and it needs to be kind of controlled, and it's his way of turning the Diamond Kingdom into a peaceful place, but I'm like, this is a pretty, like, fucked up way of doing it by essentially being like, I'm going to trick, deceive, and then mind control the king of a nation to do as I will. Just me, seemingly. Like, I know Lodros is going to be helping him. I mean, fucking, yeah, Lodros is the moral compass you should also have on your side, too. He's just like, woohoo, tweet, tweet, tweet.
But I can totally get, like, I just with like Lodros and Marcy goes like, okay, I want you to help us take back the Diamond Kingdom for good. And I was just like, well, why should I get along with you? What's your plan anyway? I'm going to use this drug to mind control the king.
You had me a drug! That sounds like a great way to...
I'm totally on board with this! You should be concerned with how enthusiastic I am with me pledging my allegiance to you, in fact.
But it is like, it's strange that it's kind of like put out here as like a note of like, yeah, that's how he's going to do it. And no one off, like everyone's just like, yep, that sounds like a right thing to do. It's like, it really doesn't. Like,
has any moral quandaries about this.
That's like, it's...
You guys firsthand witnessed what this puppet's blood magic does when one of your best friends suddenly turned to you with mindless, dead eyes and was going to murder you.
It's...
What the fuck?
It's a very morally dubious plan that hinges entirely on Mars being 100% competent and up, like, forthright with everything. Like, and I get it. He's a good guy now, but it's not like he's not still a member of the Diamond, like, the Diamond Army, and that he's not prone to, like, emotional outbursts that kind of cloud his judgment, you know? Like... It's just weird that there's no oversight to it, that no one's like, hey, maybe you should try to, like, fix things from the inside, and if need be, like, a takeover is possible. Like, I guess you could, like, look, there's absolutely an argument you could make that this is, you know, the path of least resistance, the path of least bloodshed, you know, whatever. But it's the fact that nobody has another statement to say to this, that it's just like, and I'll mind control the king and get to my, and get my kingdom exactly as I want it. And they're like, sounds like a plan. And that's when Road to Viridian City starts playing as they're off on the fucking, they're off into
the
sunset.
Road to the Diamond Kingdom.
Gonna get my control, my friend.
Control the king.
Gonna mind control the king and do all that stuff.
Like, my control.
It's delivered with the exact same, like, statement and neutrality that fucking the old dude's like, and we'll take care of Fauna and make sure that she's safe. Like, it's like, no, these aren't the same things. This is kind of questionable.
Oh, God.
Lodros flat out says, like, and I'll help Mars out! See, it looks like that'll be the fastest way to get to the top of the kingdom. I mean, seriously, this ruthless bastard's gonna mind control anyone who gets in his way.
Seriously, like, if I'm teaming up with him, I've gotta get, like, second in command to something from all this. Oh, and by the way, one day I'll totally be someone you can admire, Teach. Or something.
I'm a good guy now.
Look, my face sparkles.
You know what? If I can keep on doing this voice, then that's fine with me, I guess.
You know what? As long as I can show up and be Edwin every 1700 chapters or so or whatever, I'm perfectly okay with this. If I become a Black Bull, I would be 100% satisfied with this conclusion. It would make a lot more sense if, as Lazarus, I suggested we mind control the king, because I probably am still at least a little bit evil.
I mean, even if you had had frickin' Mars just, like, secretly keeping this medicine to himself, that'd be fine. Because then you could have him have the moment, like, later on where it's like, yes, he is a good person, but, you know, at least like, not everyone is totally on board with this.
Having one or two
characters be okay with this plan, I think would be fine. But seriously, literally everyone there, Finral, Vanessa,
Fauna, the one who was mind controlled before,
is fine with this.
Yeah, she's even excited. She's like, I'll wait for you to ever until you make the Diamond King peaceful and we'll go see the world together. And it's like,
Once your manga is adapted into an anime and I'm a voice actress in it, then we can be together.
It's like, fucking goddamn it. Apocalypse Dragon, get in here.
So Fauna and Mars have a moment because he's like, you know, please wait until I've changed the country. I'll make it the sort of place you can return to. And Fauna's like,
I'll wait forever. Once the Diamond King is peaceful, let's go see the world together.
And everyone is kind of like, you know, just like watching this. And this is, there's a sound effect of yowza. Except yeah. For Finn, who's crying tears of blood again.
Like, I get why the women, and I guess Ladros, because he's just that fucking goofy, are like...
Oh, yeah, you gotta get you some of that, buddy. Oh.
This is so spicy. I mean, they're not even kissing. They're just she's touching his shoulders, and that's basically about it.
Isn't it cute the way that they're blusting around each other? I totally ship it.
And, like, it cuts over to Asta, who's like, someday, sister, I'll do this with you. And he's like... hugging himself, and he still, like, doesn't have his shirt. He still doesn't have his shirt from the battle, and you're like, oh my god, Asta is a very sad person.
Oh my god. Can you listen? Like, we're gonna learn someday that Asta's hidden motivation is that a part of him subconsciously realizes he'll never get with the girl he's been crushing on, so he just works out and gets swole in order to hide the pain.
Like, we're gonna walk into his room one day and he can't train anymore. Like, Asta, it's time for dinner. And he's like, ah! He has his little hand puppet version of this. It's like a little habit on, like, his hand. Who's just like, oh, Asta, you're so cute. I can't wait to make out with you. He's like, get out of here. Watch, I don't care.
Non-girl squad.
He's like, look, the sister has a sister. Oh, Asta, you're cute. I think you're super cute. Let's menage a trois you.
Oh god. It's just so sad.
It's just Noelle like slowly closing the door in more ways than one.
I can't believe I ever saw anything in
it. She's like, you know what? Rebecca can have him. But she won't because she's not going to be working.
Mars and Asta have a bro moment because Mars like, you called me a friend. If you run into any trouble, I'll come help you. Anytime, no matter where you are, just so long as I can use mind control potion board to solve the problem.
He's like, so long as I'm not mind controlling the king at that certain moment.
And he and Asta do like a bro fist bump. It looks like it might be a bro forearm bump. But
yeah, I think they do like a bump, yeah.
Yeah. And Mars is like, Asta's like, oh, let's look at the way I flex my arms. Oh, every day is arm day. Gonna hide the pain. Oh, sister!
Turn the laughter turn the tears to laughter. And he just becomes lecherous. They're like, it's all making sense now. It's a kingdom of insane people.
As they're getting ready to leave, Vanessa, I guess, remembers that the Witch Queen left some parting words with her, which were, you are free, but this is still your birthplace. Come back to visit whenever you like. Oh, everything's wrapped up in a neat little bow, and they've made amends with each other. Yay. So easy. They go back to the Black Bull's base. Asta bursts in, and he's like, my arms are fixed! And now he just goes, huh, cool. Why are you naked? I think that this easily summarizes why we like Yami so much.
I wish more people would ask that, like, why do all of your clothes always explode off?
Why didn't you put a new shirt on?
Like, what's wrong?
And Yami's, because they're like, oh, Yami, we found a magic stone. Oh, okay. Alright, kid, now that your arms are fixed, go buy some booze for me.
He's just a very bad father.
Yeah, he's very dismissive of, like, literally the first three things he says are the most dismissive he could possibly be. And, cause like, they're also like, oh, are the other members back yet? Eh, they're probably dead in a ditch or something. But then finally, you know, Vanessa, you know, starts to get ready to greet Yami, and he's like, hey, welcome back. And she's happy with that, because she's like, yeah, I'm home. And, you know, it's nice that it's like, yeah, Vanessa's got this thing. It's like, yes, the Black Pearls are her home, and, yeah. He's not even asking, like, what's that cat on your shoulders?
He doesn't even acknowledge it. He doesn't even look. So he's just like, one day he's going to be like, why is there a fucking cat? Can I eat it? Why is there a cat here?
Been there for weeks.
He's like, oh, so no one answered the question, can I eat it? And I actually just finished, so hope you have another magic fucking thread cat.
So now he's going to answer the question of, can I eat? Wait.
So we've put a close now.
It was an entertaining chapter still, and it's nice, you know, yeah, closing on this saga, but still, seriously, everyone's just okay with using mind control, I guess.
I was hoping this arc was going to end, and I am actually very glad that it is over now, because I was not feeling this arc entirely. I think it picked up
getting
by the end.
Getting pretty worn out on it, yeah.
I think the biggest issue is that this arc has framed itself as one thing that it didn't really feel like for a large part of it, and it didn't really feel like it was a Vanessa arc. It felt like it was an arc that had more to do with these side characters we just met, and then Mars and Fauna. Like, I felt like if Vanessa had felt like a more prominent member or more prominent part of this entire kind of arc, this would have flowed together a lot better. But we kind of had a lot of interruptions that tied things up and just... ultimately kind of like made things a little distracting to a point and just repeated itself. I do like the way it kind of came to an end. This chapter closes things up relatively nicely, but it is still very, very strange that no one's questioning that plan. It's a very morally dubious plan that I'm really shocked no one has a qualm about, and I hope fails miserably, because
you to mind control, bitches! Or something
If that just happens to be the good thing that happens from this story, that they're just like, yeah, you know, he mind controlled the king and turned the Diamond Kingdom into a better place. It's like, wait, so what's the message of this story then? Like, hey, if you can't enact change, manipulate things with magic to turn them to your benefit.
See what an awful person that the Witch Queen was, how she was so concerned with having everything under her control, and it bit her in the ass at the end. So anyway, let's solve this problem by having everything be under our direct control.
You know what I want this series to have? Like, at the end of the chapter, like, this whole thing happens, we see how successful Mars was with this plan, and it's just at the end, it's hashtag light was right. it's just it being like, no, good intentions is justifiable with all the power, as long as your heart is true.
All right, it's fun to finish things up with One Piece. First off, it's chapter 800 and 50-something. I forget what it is actually on. But we actually have this two-page color spread of the Straw Hats and some animals facing off in a football game. And I want to make note of two things. One is the fact that, you know, everyone's wearing, like, uniforms and stuff. Except for one, Luffy, who is wearing his, like, regular shorts, but in, like, uniform colors. That's fine. And then Nami and Robin are just wearing hot pants instead of, like, football pants.
I don't even know if that's Robin, because she's so far in the back that you can't... I'm only assuming it's her, because she's also wearing the booty shorts.
Also wearing hot pants, yeah. Also, Nami's only wearing one knee pad.
Yeah, I tweeted about this. I was like, I have very many questions about Nami's attire, but the one knee pad is what bothers me the most. I'm like, why one? Why would you only wear one? I don't get it.
Well, like maybe Oda was drawing it. It was like, God, this knee pad is really hard to draw. I'm not going to do any more after this one.
I just want to draw a straight fucking line or something. Also, this also bothered me a whole lot. And I know it's...
I love the caption of it. It's so great.
You lost because you didn't win.
It's so stupid. It's so... But I love it.
This also bothered me. I know it's only because I think it's like, cause I guess the numbers they have are related to their birthdays, but because of Nami's number, I'm like, she would either be an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. And that neither of those makes sense for her. Cause she's probably like 102 pounds soaking wet. So I feel like it's a really bad thing for her to have that number.
Whatever. They're fielding only 8 people at a time.
You know what? Still a better female player on a football team than fucking
Karin Kanzuki.
Yeah, Karin from Eye Shield.
Oh god. So, it's 858 meeting, and, yeah, it's that meeting that, Jinbei said that Luffy should attend to have them, team up with Beige in order to oppose Big Mom's crew. And, we see more of the preparation for the wedding going on, first of all, at Whole Cake Chateau. We are introduced to the Big Mom Pirates head chef, Gourmet Knight Strudusen. And, he's got a ridiculous mutton chop mustache thing going on. We cut over to, the hideout, where, Peckham's is with, some of the fishmen that were attending with Jinbei. And, they're keeping him in the dark about what's actually going on because he is still loyal to Mama, despite helping out the Straw Hats and stuff. So he's like, oh, I've got to stop them. I've got to alert them about Beige's plan. And they're like, oh, no, no, you know, yeah, Jinbei is definitely reported to Mama. Yeah, it's fine. She'll be crushing that traitor. Yes, definitely. And Beckham's like, are you sure? Because there can't be any doubt about this. You're injured. You should, you know, stay here. Come on, you know. But what if the report doesn't reach your ears? Like, no, you must rest. You're injured. And then eventually Beckham just goes like, you guys are acting kind of dodgy. You know, you've been... There's a lot of stuff going on in the middle of the night. I saw folks carrying luggage around and stuff. I mean, you know, I'm glad that you saved me, but I really should go and make sure everything's like, no, you can't go. And so, but I do like the little explanation of like, oh yeah, Beckham's is actually still loyal to Mom. And so that is a concern. So, we cut then to Luffy and Sanji arriving outside of the fire tank Pirate's base. It's a huge fortress that Capone has, and they are greeted outside by Vito, the Phantom Phantom Gun, who is the Chameleon Tongue guy that we've seen pop up a few times. And he greets Sanji first of all because he's my Germa hero, and see the other Straw Hats are already inside. Chopper greets them, and it's actually really weird because Chopper's not wearing a hat. You rarely see that ever.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable. And it's also like, so wait, how did you get here? Like, I know that they all took the mirror world, but why are you inside already then?
Yeah.
And having like, just finished a bath.
Yeah, and Jumper's like, come on guys, take a bath. And Luffy's like, why are you just relaxing here? Also, you hate baths. And Vito says, ah, the Godfather refuses to meet with unclean guests. So, of course, we get a sensual scene in the women's bathroom for about 4 pages.
I mean, I suppose it makes sense as these are the characters who would converse with one another. And it's not as, like, fan service-tastic as this same scene would be in, like, Fairy Tail, per se. You just kind of see that they're nude a bunch, and you get, like, one shot of Rabbit Nami in the same bathtub together.
We get about 2 or 3 cheesecake shots, which for a total of 4 pages is kind of low, honest, low concentration, I guess.
It's surprising how many of the shots are them from the shoulders up or from the back. Mm-hmm. Like, and not like, you know, the ass back, but like just from the back, you know, waist up, essentially.
But
so.
It definitely starts off on the wrong foot of like, oh, and then Naomi's in the shower and there's soap suds just over the parts that need to be covered up. It's like, hey, come on.
Considering there was a scene in Thriller Bark where Nami had just finished taking a shower and then got pressed up against a wall by an invisible Absalom, like, there's certainly been more flagrant situations of this in One Piece, so. Mm-hmm.
So we get a bit of talking between Carrot and Nami with what is her actual name? Because I think she says her name at some point, but it's Lola's sister, her twin sister, in fact. And so Lola's like, yeah, oh, they're telling her about what actually happened to Lola. He's like, oh yeah, she turned into like a warthog zombie, and she's doing fine now. And also Carrot is kind of reacting to this as news too, because like, oh wow, there's an island of the dead and stuff. Wow. So Nami's like, oh, I'm sure that she's still off being a pirate and doing well. Lola's sister has her and Beige's son with them, you know, just sitting in a little basket next to her. And, The sister says, there's a reason that Mama is hated by all the giants around the world. It's why there are no giants in Totoland despite all the other races being represented. One day, Lola had a surprise suitor who claimed it was love at first sight. It was none other than Prince Loki of Elbaf, land of the giants. To which Nami says, a prince? Ooh la la. Like,
okay. I mean, it does make sense that Nami's always like, you know.
Money?
She's like, you can make money by marrying people? Ooh.
The sister goes on and says, like, yes, you know, Mama was incredibly happy because if she became a princess of Elbaf, she could overcome her long-standing antagonism with the giants, use them to gain use of the Elbaf warriors, the fighting force of what's held to be the mightiest nation in the world. But Lola ended up running away from home because she didn't want to marry someone she didn't love, and then her twin sister was passed off as Lola. They realized that it wasn't her. Things got even worse with the giants. After that, Mama gave up on trying to have real giants in our group and started investing in research to gigantify regular humans instead. And her rage at Lola has only grown over time. She's a wanted woman here. If she ever comes back, they'll kill her. Plus, I don't think Mama likes me much anymore given my resemblance. Oh, that's really sad, actually. Because she's just kind of been enduring the abuse in Mama's hands this whole time. So, the fact that she's okay with, Capone Beige wanting to assassinate her, that's, not really surprising at this point. In fact, when Beige mentioned assassinating her, I didn't feel a single thing. And she actually feels kind of guilt a little bit of guilt over it, I guess. We cut over to, Luffy and Brooke coming out of the bath. Brooke says, it felt like I was going to heaven. Well, not today, I say. then they go over and they see a refrigerator, and Brooke's like, oh, look, Luffy, they've got milk. And, Luffy's like, ah, perfect timing. I lost a tooth here. And Brooke's like, and I've got a crack in my skull. And they both drink milk.
All better. I do love that that's literally already been established to be the way that Brook somehow just restores his body. And I love that that's now just Luffy can do as well. And, like, everyone else in the world is like us. They're like, how the fuck does that make sense? And they're too busy being satisfied by drinking milk straight out of a carton.
They're about ready to do a freaking drink commercial.
More satisfied than I've ever been in my life drinking milk in that one moment. I'm like,
got my tooth back. We cut over to Brûlé and the locomotive guy being angry at Chiffon. That's Lola's sister's name. And they're like, oh, you know, I can't believe that you're an accomplice in all of this. And Chiffon says, oh, come on, you know how I've been abused. I'm worried about Lola. Beige and Pez are my only family, so that's all I need. So essentially just establishing, okay, this is where Brûlé and the locomotive are tied up while all of the people who want to be there are actually conversing. And, so a long time ago, the Straw Hats had like gangster outfits, like in, this one color spread. I think it was around the time of like,
Strong World. Cause they actually wore gangster outfits in Strong World.
Mm-hmm. And, so they're wearing gangster outfits now. And, Luffy's even got a freaking fedora over his straw hat.
Oh my god, that's what that is. I, like, for a moment, I was like, does he have, like, a fur-lined or, like, a straw hat-lined fedora? And then the one panel where you see him, like, looking straight on, you can see he's just wearing it over top of it, which is fucking great. I just gotta say, Brooke was made for this kind of attire.
Brooke looks so cool. God. Pedro looks pretty badass, too.
Yeah, I wish Sanji got the suit. I guess it wouldn't make sense because he always wears the suit, so they went with something a little different. But man,
yeah,
he fits that to a T as well.
He's basically dressed like Fabio right now.
I feel like there was one with Frankie too, and there's one where he wears the full suit, and then it's one where it's the top, but he still just wears the Speedo briefs at the bottom, which I love so much more.
So Beige, you know, kicks things up and like, all right, we've got 3.5 hours, so let's decide if we're going to work together or not. So you guys are curly intruders. The tightest solution would actually be for us to just kill you all right now. And Sanji points out, well, if I die, then you're not going to be able to kill Big Mom because you're not going to have a ceremony. So, and, Beige's like, yeah, you're right. You're the one man I mustn't kill. And Jim is like, come on, let's just skip to everything else. Luffy, can you work with this man? And Luffy stares intently. And he's like, wait a minute, you're Caesar Cloud!
And I called it! And I don't want to say it like I knew it because it was really obvious, but everyone in the chat kept giving me shit. They're like, no, it's not him. It just looks exactly fucking like him.
I love how this plays out because Luffy's like, wait a minute, you're Caesar Clown. And Chopper's like, Caesar Clown, where?
And then it's him being like, no, I'm Gangster Gastino. So he has the exact same fucking laugh. The same.
And like he has an introduction thing pop up, but it says Caesar Clown underneath Gangster Gastino.
And that's when Luffy's like, oh, sorry, wrong guy. And starts sitting down. It's essentially like the, El Generico, Kevin's, Sami Zayn joke, where it's like, no, they're two different people completely.
Have you heard what cause Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are maintaining kayfabe on that. Cause everyone knows, like, okay, clearly you were, you know, known as Kevin Steen in Ring of Honor and stuff like that. You remember when you were like, you know, teaming up with El Generico? Yeah, I do. We had this match, you know, where I, you know, powerbombed him on a ladder and stuff. And then he goes like, whatever happened to that guy?
The story is
actually, I heard he went to go help out, orphanages. In Mexico.
Yeah.
And then he died.
Oh no. The dark end of that story.
Like, he's just so upfront about it. It's like, yeah, you know, I used to wrestle in Ring of Honor, but he still doesn't say that Sami Zayn used to be El Generico. It's like, no, clearly they were completely different people.
I hope Sami Zayn one day gets into the Hall of Fame and they still deny that part of his history.
Like, Kevin Owens, like, inducts him and he's like, we've known each other since I was wrestling in Ring of Honor and we knew each other back then and you were training.
Yeah, he's like, I remember when we first met here at NXT.
Your twin brother, El Generico. Oh god, I love that. I do love that. Yeah, Luffy's like, oh yeah, sorry. Oh wait, you are Caesar Clown. Don't try and fool me. Skipping also over the explanation of Caesar Clown being upset over Capone Beige, then deciding to be in disguise when he heard the Straw Hats were coming up. Oh god, this is the best he came up with, was just spiking his hair.
And calling himself Gastino. Not changing his fucking monogrammed gloves, by the way.
Oh, I love Caesar Clown. Caesar Clown is like, and thanks to you guys, I got handed over to Big Mom, and so my only hope of escape from certain death was this guy taking control of my heart and making me his slave. Oh god. So, Capone gets upset with, Caesar Clown's shenanigans. He starts to crush his heart. And then Luffy's like, all right, first off, before we do anything else, let me punch you for shooting back up. And they're like, Luffy, what are you doing? No, we can't do this. And he's like, I think he starts to launch his hand forward. And I can't tell exactly what happens because his hand doesn't reach him. I can't tell what happens to his hand.
I think he goes to punch Beige, and Beige just, like, dodges it. Like, he goes to, like, a punch, and Beige just moves it to the side. Because you can see his hand stretched out, and it looks like it goes right past Beige's neck. And I assume.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You can just see the lines going past him, yeah. And so, you know, obviously this starts to kick things off between them. You know, the Straw Hats are trying to restrain Luffy. Luffy's like, he shot my friend! I deserve to punch him! The gang is leaping to action because he's insulted Capone, he's insulted the Godfather, but Capone is still, it just kind of goes, Vito, let him do it. Okay, one of them tries to maintain peace. Vito tries to maintain peace by saying, take it easy, and Capone's like, nah, let him do it, let him kick him out. So, Jinbei's like, alright. Luffy, do you like Big Mom? No, I hate her! Then that makes us allies. You can fight out later. If you form an alliance now, it will give your cause the advantage. And Luffy's like, alright, so what's the plan? And Capone's like, I've got it all arranged in great detail. And Caesar Clown is also on board with it. And he's like, okay, let's carry this out and let's get it done with. So, going to have, obviously, not a very friendly relationship going on between the forces opposing Big Mom, and I think then that's the best for it, I guess. And we're getting a countdown too, continuing, to 3 hours and 20 minutes until the tea party. So.
Yes. So, I'll just say it was a very fun chapter because I think we need to wrap things up here.
Yeah, we're done. We got to wrap things up. Favorite chapter, MVPs.
I'm going to give my favorite chapter to, I think I'm going to give it to Dr. Stone this week.
And I am going to go with Dr. Stone as well. I really like the way that it advanced things and, also the humor. Oh, overall, very good chapter. One Piece has won the audience series poll. So, but yeah, also a very good chapter. So
yes.
Problem with that. MVP.
Character MVP is tough for me.
There were a lot of shining ones, weren't there?
Eh, fuck it. I'm going to give it to August. I think that was a nice twist and one of the better executed moments of Fairy Tail, and I want to give credit where credit is due. So I'll give it to Fairy Tail and, August.
I mean, there's a lot of different ones you could go with. Like Caesar Clown just showing up like that alone, I think is, could give it to him. The stuff with, Deku and Mirio both really shined in that sequence. But I'm going to give it to Emma. Because it feels like, you know, a really big, this is, you know, the type of character she is moment for her.
Yeah.
She doesn't even accomplish anything because she gets thwarted, but the fact that even though she knows what's the smart thing to do, she's so loyal to her friends that she can't just abandon him this way. And, you see how much she really cares about her friends.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, that is gonna do. Good. So thank you, Cap. We record the show starting at around 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesdays on both twitch.tv/realty and hitbox.tv/realty. And if there's anything that goes on, if any plans change, you can follow us on Twitter to stay updated on that stuff. Follow the official at WMR podcast Twitter account and follow your hosts at realty and at Why Roof Time.
Yes.
You can check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes. And you can subscribe to us on our YouTube channel as well. And if you do those things, be sure to also leave a comment and rating. If you do it on iTunes, it helps us to beat the woodworkers in the hobby section.
And that is greatly appreciated. I want to give a special thanks, by the way, to SmegLord1, who said it's a good show with puts out a lot of content from the analysis and discussion of around 11 different series to the bonus shows. You guess will get the well-handled banter between the hosts and things ranging from rant to an idiocy to the series to an hilariously absurd tangents or their eternal quest to beat the woodworkers. So thank you, SmegLord, because you helped us to defeat the woodworkers in a small way. I don't think we actually did it. I think once again, we were inferior to the woodworkers, but they have a monopoly. Look, we could do it this way. Or we could use blood magic to control the woodworkers and turn it into...
just have them, like, insult minorities on their podcasts.
That's our backup plan.
If you want to give us feedback or suggest a manga for us to read for the show or ask us a question for our Q&A episodes, you can send all that stuff via email to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. We recorded a couple of things recently that, as Chris mentioned, I think before we started recording, that are going to go up shortly enough. Commentaries, Q&A episodes, and bonus episodes. We are also planning on having a second commentary.
We missed one last month, so it'll be the one for this month still coming out. That's likely going to be Digimon episodes.
Mm-hmm. Special thanks also go out to the guys who help us make the podcast what it is, Steve Mann and Infamous Planet. Infamous Planet creates the frame around us on the video for the stream, and Steve Mann creates our title cards. And you can check out Steve Mann's work in a bunch of different places, neurocfanboy.deviantart.com. He's got his own Patreon, patreon.com/Steve Mann, and it's very lewd, so be aware of what you're getting into, though.
If you're already following Ben's eye on Twitter, though, you have nothing to be worried about. You've already seen porn stars' assholes.
And that is going to do it.
Yes. So no last thought to wrap this up on. Instead, I'm going to take you out to the dulcet tones of August singing We Didn't Start the Fire. Nick, you start it.
It was always burning since the world's been turned. Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, Sophistical to Winter Joe DiMaggio.
You know a lot more of that song than I did. I would have just been like,
Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, Television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe.
I'm like, I'll take it now, Nick. We didn't start the higher. I'm like, you had the easiest part.